Good evening. I'd like to call to order the regular session of the Oro Valley Town Council session and later study session. Mr. Standish, if you would please do roll call.
Mayor Winfield?
Here.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Pena?
Here.
Councilmember Rodman?
Here.
And Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
Thank you. We'll have the Pledge of Allegiance this evening. What I'd like to just alert everyone to is that we'll do a rolling Pledge of Allegiance by each of the council members going by alpha order. I gave the Pledge of Allegiance 2 weeks ago. Tonight, Vice Mayor will do the Pledge of Allegiance, and so we'll go to that part of our agenda.
Thank you, and I invite you to stand if you'd like, wherever you are. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I'm going to this evening give some welcoming remarks, which are really intended to give some instruction about viewing tonight's meeting, given the fact that we're having this meeting by the Zoom format. And so I'd like to thank everybody for joining us tonight. I would especially like to express my appreciation to the community. I want to thank you for your response to this pandemic. Clearly, you've shown the care that you have for every individual of our community by responding to Governor Ducey's executive orders, and those have largely been intended to safeguard our healthcare workers, to ensure that there is sufficient ability in our hospitals and other healthcare facilities to have the capacity to receive COVID patients without going into a crisis mode. You have responded well to the physical distancing and personal hygiene requirements of the Center for Disease Control. And this has largely helped us to flatten the curve and to avoid some of the problems that other states and areas of our country have experienced. So I want to thank you for responding to that. And if you were not able to hear the governor's most recent press conference, which was today at 3, he again reviewed the metrics and explained that we are still solidly in phase one of this reopening. And what that means is that we're not to congregate in groups larger than 10. And so it's because of those phase one guidelines that we're meeting tonight in this format. And to comply with those social distancing requirements and to provide the community an opportunity to participate. So the mechanics of tonight's meeting are going to be a bit different than our in-person meetings. And in order to participate, everyone must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. For those unfamiliar with the Zoom software, I'm going to provide a quick overview. And I'm going to apologize at the beginning of this. This is somewhat lengthy, but necessary to help ensure as much as possible that everyone that would like to participate knows how to do that. So everyone's microphone, except for the individual that has the floor, will be muted throughout the meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. Only select staff can turn on your microphone, at the appropriate time if you'd like to ask a question or provide comments. I'll do my best to let everyone know when it's appropriate to raise your hand for a particular agenda item. If you wish to address the council on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please use the raise your hand icon in Zoom. And only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, find and select the participants icon. This will open a dialogue box that lists all participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you have the option to click on raise your hand. And so you would click on that if you're wanting to speak. And then when you're acknowledged by myself, then you'll have that opportunity. So those who are participating by phone, to have an opportunity to speak, you would press *9 to raise your hand. So please wait to raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced, and after I announce the opportunity to do so. Otherwise, we'll not be able to discern which topic that you wish to address in relation to the agenda. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. This applies to the audience, staff, and members of the town council. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time to do so. At the appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to provide questions or comments. I will then announce your name, and staff will unmute your access so that you can speak. This is important. You need to please make sure that you're not also muted on your personal device, so you also have to unmute yourself. Please review tonight's agenda so that you know the item on which you'd like to speak. Please don't raise your hand until we have made it to that item on the agenda. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you're an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the 3-minute limit. So I know that was a lot of information, and but 2 weeks ago we had a successful meeting, and we it's our hope this evening will be similar. Now, are there, we'll have upcoming meeting announcements, Mr. Standish.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Stormwater Utility Commission meeting for May 21st has been canceled. The Town Council will be holding a special session on May 22nd at 9 a.m. via Zoom, and that is to strictly go into executive session. The Board of Adjustment will be holding a meeting on May 26th at 3 p.m. via Zoom. The Town Council will then be holding a budget study session on May 27th at 6 p.m. via Zoom. And then if need be, that budget study session will be continued to the next day, May 28th at 6 p.m. via Zoom. The Historic Preservation Commission meeting for June 1st has been canceled. The Budget and Finance Commission will be holding a special session on June 2nd at 4 p.m. via Zoom. And then the next town council regular session will be on June 3rd at 6 p.m. via Zoom. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Council reports. Do any council members have a report this evening? Seeing none, we'll move on to the next item, which is the town manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I'm pleased to give you a report this evening. The first thing that I wanted to do is on behalf of the town staff, we wanted to wish all of our graduates from college, high school, middle school, kindergarten, we wanted to congratulate them on their achievements recently or upcoming, and we wish them all the best in their future endeavors. I wanted to mention that the town's annual pavement preservation program is officially completed, and frankly, just in the nick of time as the heat started building back up, which causes problems for some of our treatments. And a special thanks to our Public Works Director, Paul Kiesler, and his crews. They do an outstanding job overseeing our roads here in Oro Valley, clearly the best in the region, and we're very proud of them. Our streets also include the maintenance of some landscape areas, and ordinarily the town relies on inmate labor to help maintain that street landscaping. But unfortunately, due to the COVID crisis, the state prison system suspended that labor both to the town and also to ADOT. And so this has obviously affected our ability to tackle some of those areas. We are, however, using our contractor to help with the application of herbicide to help manage and mitigate our weeds. And as our crews wrap up the other major maintenance projects that we do this time of year, we will start transitioning them back to some of that maintenance. In the meantime, we do welcome our Adopt a Road families and groups' efforts and all that they do in helping with litter removal. We thank them for their continued work. And if anyone does have an interest in an Adopt program, please email ask@orovalleyaz.gov and we'd be happy to get you information. We have plenty more opportunities where those came from. As you know, lobbies on campus opened last week and the transition's been very smooth. The community center and aquatic center will be opening on Monday, June 1st. And since the governor's order, as the mayor mentioned, requires 10 or more less group gatherings and 6-foot social distancing, and Pima County has also developed additional safety measures for pools and fitness centers. You can imagine it's hard to control kids in a recreation pool and trying to maintain those standards at this time and keep them socially distant. Therefore, the Aquatic Center will be open for lap swim only on June 1st when it opens. Additional limitations will be implemented at the community center. For example, we will only have 12 people in a fitness class. Our Parks and Recreation Director, Christy Diaz-Trahan, is working on final protocols for our patrons and our visitors, and those will be communicated to our residents here in the near future. We've also begun to transition our staff back to their workplaces. While we are still emphasizing the need to keep our workspaces safe for employees and also for our visitors, we're still allowing some telework as we can, especially where there are some shared work areas. We're continuing to use virtual meeting platforms as much as possible, minimize in-person meetings. We're stepping up our protocols for cleaning, particularly in our shared spaces. The town has masks and hand sanitizer, other items for employees, and we are mandating the use of masks when meeting with members of the public, when we're in enclosed spaces where we cannot observe the social distancing requirements. And then lastly, I did want to mention that I have received, as I believe the council has as well, a number of emails from representatives of the FAST swim team regarding the cost to use the Aquatic Center when it reopens. And I just wanted to let the council know that I will be looking into this issue over the next few days and I will circle back with them. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Any questions for the town manager? Seeing none, the agenda will remain as posted. Mr. Standish, are there any call to audience?
Mr. Mayor, we do have, I believe, 6 or 7 individuals for a call to audience.
Okay. So we'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, Mayor and Council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. If you wish to address the council on matter not on the agenda, please notify us by clicking the raise your hand icon on your computer or pressing *9 on your phone now. And I'm going to pause for a moment while those that would like to speak either click raise your hand or use *9 on your phone. So, Mr. Standish, I have five raised hands. If someone is on the phone, how is that? How am I alerted to that?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. So if they're on the phone, if they do *9, they would still show the raised hand.
Would they? Okay, so that's not going to differentiate who's...
Correct. And I do have a couple individuals that have contacted me prior to the meeting, and I believe all of them are going to be participating via Zoom, except a couple of them. If they can't get on Zoom, they might be calling in. The first person that was on my list was Mr. Kurt Weibel.
Okay. I'd like to just take them in the order that I see them on the participants list, if that's, I see Mr. Weibel, and so we'll certainly give Mr. Weibel an opportunity to speak. So just a reminder to our residents or those who will be speaking tonight, if you would please state your name, and if you're a resident of the town of Oral Valley, a reminder about the 3-minute rule, and there will be a timer that you'll see that will help you to know when that 3 minutes has concluded. Also, you don't need to take the full 3 minutes if you don't choose to. So I would like to call upon Ms. Stamer to address the council. If staff would please enable Ms. Stamer's microphone to speak. And then once that has happened, Ms. Stamer, we invite you to proceed with your comments.
Hi, Mary Winfield. Thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to talk. My name is Natalie Stamer. I've been an Oro Valley resident for 8 years now. I have 3 swimmers on the fast swim team, and I've been on the fast board of directors for 5 years. So I am really familiar with the aquatics community. My kids have actually been swimming for about 7 years now. So Ms. Jacobs, thank you for addressing our concerns that we have submitted last night and again today. I know that we've had several members of our team address the issue. I, however, wanted to address it here. This evening, of course, an email was sent from the public to the public from the Parks and Recreation regarding the safe and reasonable changes to facility policies and procedures. We also then, after the public was informed, we received a note to our teams informing us that we'd be at about 50% capacity in terms of swimmers per lane. Again, completely understand that and why we would be doing that. However, at the Oro Valley Aquatic Center, we have yet to hear if there's a corresponding reduction in lane fees. About a year, less than a year ago, our lane rental fee schedule was celebrated as an accomplishment, our increase. It was celebrated last night at the town with the Parks and Rec meeting as an accomplishment. Those lane fee rental increases were 100% increase for our annual fees. That nearly brought our team to our knees. We were forced to hike our monthly dues for our members, work with local businesses for sponsorships, and rely on swim meet income. With the pandemic, we can no longer rely on our sponsors. We can't hold meets for obvious reasons. We've yet to be told if we can hold lessons. That's not been addressed yet. And obviously, we're limited to the number of swimmers we can get in per lane. I want to note that FAST has made nearly a $1 million economic impact on the town of Oro Valley in the last 24 months alone, and many times that over the last several years. In the Park and Rec board meeting last night, the aquatics department listed also that one of their continuing accomplishments was supporting and attracting special events at the Aquatics Center linked to economic impact. However, the vast majority of those events held at Oro Valley Aquatic Center that have an economic impact were actually secured and run primarily by FAST and made possible because of thousands of volunteer hours that were donated by individuals who will be directly impacted by a rate hike if you so choose to do, if our lane fees are not reduced. Therefore, we're here collectively. The Oro Valley Pirates are on our call today too. And we have we are collectively asking you to please reduce lane fees by 50% to reflect the reduction in lane capacity until such policies are lifted.
Does that conclude your remarks, Ms. Stamer?
It's my room.
Okay.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Mr. Kurt Weibel.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Thanks for the chance to speak. My name is Kurt Weibel. I've been a resident of Oro Valley for almost 16 years now. I've got three kids, wrapping up first, third, and fifth grade at Wilson here, but they are all members of Flying Fish Arizona Swim Team, also known as FAST. I wanted a chance to speak tonight to support the request that Natalie is mentioning that's being submitted to the town on behalf of FAST and Oro Valley Pirates, which, to my knowledge, are the only two youth swim programs in this area. They do a fantastic job. And as she mentioned, in the last year, we saw our fees to use the facility double. And now if you decrease the number of kids in the pool by half, you've essentially quadrupled the fee per kid. And I don't know if you've ever been a part of a club or a team and suddenly the fees quadrupled. And if it happened during an economic downturn, chances are you'd be looking for other things for your kids to do. I think that'd be a tremendous loss. You know, Natalie stated it better than I could, but we have a really tremendous organization that benefits the kids in Oro Valley, but also brings people to Oro Valley. I'm not on the board. I'm just a parent who sits in on meetings. I've heard them discuss what happens if we move forward with no changes. And I've heard as much as a $5,000 a month deficit for the team. And I think we can all agree that's not sustainable, especially for an organization this small. So I'm really hopeful that the town will work with FAST and with the Oro Valley Pirates, at least through this period where USA Swimming is telling us we can only have two or three kids in a swim lane, just to get us through this time. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. The next individual in the queue is Galaxy S9.
How's it going? It's actually Tom Shee here. I just didn't get a chance to change my name on Zoom. I'm a resident of Oro Valley, Mayor. I'm also a parent whose child is with FAST Swim Team. And I would just like to second everything that's just come before me in terms of our concerns with the finances. As it is, it's affordable. And like Chris just said there, if it was to, it's basically a snowball effect you're looking at. If the fees were to go up, the participants will go down, and Oro Valley Aquatic Center, I feel, will lose out on the revenue of FAST. And that's, as Natalie had stated, that's $1 million nearly over 2 years. That's a sizable hole. Of course, things could be reassessed when, if we ever return to the norm, but for now, it's tough times for everyone. We're all in it together, and I just think a little assistance from Oro Valley would be greatly appreciated by FAST to just see us through until we can get back to normal in terms of the numbers that we had per lane and can host events again that subsidize all our swimming training sessions and swim lessons. That's pretty much all I got to say. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Mr. John Jones, you're in the next up.
Good evening, Mayor. My name is John Jones. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. Been a resident for a little over a year now. My daughter swims on the FAST team. And so I'm going to take a little different approach to this. As we come out of a quarantine, everybody's looking for something to do and exercise and health and everything else. I think swimming provides a good opportunity for that and gets the kids back to with their friends that they've been able to see or interact with during this whole quarantine. And so with the increase in fees or the lack of reduction in fees, I think that that opportunity goes away, and then it gives kids more free time to get in trouble. Speaking from a law enforcement background, you know, idle hands are the devil's hands. So I think a little bit of help from the town for an organization that does so much for the town as an economic generator, but just for kids and activity to keep them busy, I think is very important for the community, especially coming out of a situation like this. That's all I have, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Jeremy Mansell. Mr. Jeremy Mansell. Jeremy, you may have to unmute yourself.
I have now, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members, for allowing me to speak tonight. I am not a resident of Oro Valley, but I have two children who also swim on the fast swim team. Prior to the meeting, I had prepared some comments to make, but it appears almost all of my comments have been made prior to me stepping up. So I'd like to change what I was going to say just a little bit, understanding, as Kurt Weibel said, I sit in to the board member meetings. I'm not a member of the board there. But I've heard the comments about operating budgets and how the team is affected. And comments we've heard recently are a potential of a $5,000 per month deficit based on reductions that are going to be required in the number of kids allowed in each one of the lanes. And, you know, obviously social distancing issues. To cover that, it would require at least a $35 to $40 per swimmer. There's over 150 kids on that team. $35 to $40 per swimmer increase, and as of the other comments been made, that's not sustainable for everybody. And that team would lose some of those people, and likely at some point could lead to the team dissolving. If training fees aren't increased, team operates at a $5,000 deficit. Obviously not a good business model, team dissolves. Where this affects the town, I think, first of all, the team pays facility rentals for the aquatic center. As I understand, that value was over $100,000 a year that the team has paid in rental fees for practices and swim meets. Team's not there. That's a revenue source at the aquatic center that's lost. Swim meets bring in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of swimmers. If one team at your pool has 150 swimmers, how many more does a large competitive meet bring in? And those swimmers bring families with them. Those have impacts, economic impacts to your hotels, your restaurants, businesses in your area. I can guarantee any restaurant owner who's ever seen a swimmer eat after competition would be lined up right behind me to support everything that we're asking for. And I think the requests are pretty simple. All we're looking for is a temporary reduction. We're not necessarily asking for permanent reduction in lane fees. We need help as we come out of a global health crisis to sustain a business that supports the community. Thank you.
Thank you. At the moment, I don't see any additional raised hands. There was one individual, but I no longer see them on the list.
Is Mr. Eric Tomei still on?
Okay, so that it's returned, and then there's also a second. Mr. Eric Tomei.
Thank you, Mayor Winfield and Council. I am Eric Tomei, and as you may know, I'm a member of the Historic Preservation Commission, but I'm here individually as a resident of Oro Valley of 11 years. I speak tonight in support of something a little different, and I strongly support the swim team, but I'm here to in support of moving the Oro Valley Cultural Division into the garage at Steam Pump Ranch. I've recently been made aware of a town survey that shows a significant interest in use by Oro Valley citizens and events at the ranch. It is nice to have data that supports what's been my longstanding opinion. It's my understanding the town needs more office space, and I believe that any investment in the garage to solve that problem will have a compounding positive effect as long as any construction on the building conforms to the preservation criteria required. In addition to solving the town's immediate problem, I think it shows the town's commitment to one of its biggest assets that has previously been neglected. It will put someone who has a vested interest in the overall ranch at the ranch during business hours, which makes it more accessible and provides a level of security that does not currently exist. It will allow the town to market the ranch more efficiently and effectively, and it will further enhance some of the programs and events that already take place there. While it may not be the most important need at the ranch, it does further the overall goals and, more importantly, the progress towards the preservation obligations the town is under from the easement, the 2008 Steam Pump Ranch Master Plan, and the recommendations of the last structural assessment. I also believe that a significant investment in any of the buildings that was not already significantly rehabilitated or restored, like the Push House, even if it is motivated by the town's need to make it useful and functional, is a win for the overall future of the ranch. I strongly urge this council to put money towards the garage for their purposes, and I hope that the garage is only the next step in the process. Thank you.
The next individual is calling in by phone. The last four digits of the number are 6281.
Thank you. My name is Cynthia Wicker, and I'm a resident of Rancho Vistoso, and I have a completely different topic to address. I'm speaking about the park and recreation budget, particularly. I participated in the survey regarding the park and rec needs for Oral Valley, and as I understand from the results, they were quite clear. The citizens view the greatest needs are for paved walking paths and walls and space. And I just want to point out that this is exactly what the former Vistoso golf course has to offer. So I'm just suggesting, recommending that it's time for the town council to heed the will of the community and move forward to acquire this property, putting it to use as the citizens have expressed. That concludes my comment, and thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Ms. Wicker, if you could just hold the line for a moment. I believe that the council were able to hear you, but the volume wasn't as good as it could have been. I don't know, staff, if there's anything. Okay, now that's much better. I should have spoke up sooner. Could you just repeat, Ms. Wicker?
Sure, I can. No problem. I was saying that I live in Rancho Vistoso. I've been a resident here for about 6 years, and I participated in the survey regarding the park and rec needs for Oral Valley. And the results, I thought, were pretty evident what the people really want. They view the greatest needs are for paved walking paths, hiking paths, more open space. And I just wanted to point out that that is exactly what the former Vistoso golf course has to offer. So I'm urging the town council to heed the will of the community and move forward, acquiring this property, getting it off the market, and putting it to use as the citizens have expressed. And that concludes my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person is Lori.
Hi, my name is Richard Molnar. I'm on Lori's iPad. I'm a Oro Valley resident for the last 14 years. The topic I want to make a comment on and ask a question is about the Parks and Recs budget money. The town's phase one study voting results show the highest ratings in a few areas. And the first one is there's a major unfulfilled need for paved paths and hiking trails for families and seniors. And second, a desire for open space conservation areas. My question is, with that said, are the town staff members going to make a recommendation to the town council that is in line with study data as it relates to the closed Vistoso golf property owned by Romson? We believe that now is the time for the town of Oro Valley to acquire this property. We should really receive a fair share of the Parks and Recs budget money here in Rancho Vistoso. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I believe there's another person in the queue, Richard. or that may have been the individual that just spoke. I'm not entirely sure.
Yes, I think.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, before I close the call to audience, if there's any other individuals that would like to speak, if you could please click on raise the hand, and or *9 on your phone. The name that I see, the individual has already spoken, so. All right, I'm going to close the call to audience. And excuse me one second here. So we'll go to presentations. Item 2, Mr. Standish.
Presentation and possible discussion of the town manager's recommended budget for fiscal year 2020-21.
Thank you. Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. As you know, it is budget time, and I appreciate your patience in letting us have an extra couple of weeks before we delivered to you the recommended budget for fiscal year 2021. So tonight, really, this is step one in a process. And if we'll just go to the next. So tonight, Mr. Mayor, members of council, what I'm going to review with you very briefly is I'm going to provide a budget timeline, where we are in the process and what you can expect. We'll also, I'll be joined by our Chief Financial Officer, Dave Gephardt, who will assist me with the presentation. So we'll do an overview of the budget and highlights of the strategic leadership plan, focus areas, and some highlights of capital investments. Next. As you can see from this schedule, we are in the process where it's highlighted in yellow of the presentation. This process started back in February. I'm sure the council recalls that we reviewed preliminary revenue information with the council at the strategic leadership plan or at your strategic planning retreat back in February. And you may also recall that that seems like a lifetime ago, given all of the changes that have taken place over the last several months. And so we've had to review and re-review, project and reproject based on the information that we have. But where we are today is after this evening, which is, again, just the overview, kind of daylighting this this agenda, which has also been posted on the town's website. Next week, next Wednesday, the 27th, we will have a study session where we will delve in deeper on a departmental basis and then be there to answer any questions. Our team will be there to answer any questions that you may have. And we've also scheduled a second study session the following evening on the 28th, should that be necessary. So if we're able to cover everything on the 27th, we're good. And if not, we'll at your discretion, Mr. Mayor, continue it to the 27th. Then on June 17th, we'll hold a public hearing for the tentative adoption, and July 1st then we'll present the final budget to you for adoption at that time. Next, what I'd like to do now is turn this over to our Chief Financial Officer, David Gephardt. David?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of Town Council. This slide really is a highlight of our entire budget in comparison to the current year budget that's being proposed versus where we're at currently. The recommended budget is almost $101 million, which is a $10 million or 9% decrease from the current year. The general fund is about 3.7% less, which includes the planned use of $2.3 million in reserves. The projected total ending general fund balance for next fiscal year is 14.8 million, which exceeds the 25% policy threshold by about $4.7 million. The general fund budget includes a large and robust $5 million contingency for unexpected items that may arise through the fiscal year. And these items can be either a reduction of revenue or not necessarily a reduction, but revenue that comes in less than what we expect or plan on, or it could be inflationary components or costs that exceed what we plan on as well. So it really provides protection to the general fund for those unexpected items throughout the entire fiscal year. Next. So this slide includes some high-level comparisons by category to the current fiscal year. And you see that personnel, O&M, capital, and debt service are all decreasing, with the largest decrease being sustained in capital purchases, which kind of makes sense, because with capital purchases, they're typically one-time purchases, and they can be deferred or delayed. And so that's really what you see here. The other categories are relatively static, although debt service also, you see a decrease of about 12.5% from the current fiscal year. Next. So this slide is a pie chart depicting all of the expenditure categories in relation to each other and the total budget. And personnel, not surprisingly, is the highest percentage. But I'd like to highlight both debt service for being the lowest percentage, and the contingency reserves at being about $9 million or 9%. So that really demonstrates the financial health and strength of the town for sustaining itself through this pandemic crisis and the economic factors associated with it. To have such a low debt service percentage as in regards to the total budget is really encouraging and really places us in a strong position moving forward to navigate this crisis. Next. So this slide is another pie chart showing the different funds of the town in relation to each other and the town as a whole. And the general fund, of course, is the largest fund. I mean, we should expect that at 44.7 million, almost 45 million, and 44% of the total town budget. The second largest fund is the water utility fund at 20.3 million, or 20% of the budget. The fund amounts represented in this slide include contingency, but they don't include transfers between funds. So really what you're looking at here is projected total outflows from the town for next fiscal year. Next. So this slide highlights some of the significant revenue expectations in the general fund budget. So because the general fund is the primary operating fund for the town, we kind of wanted to dive deeper into the factors impacting that fund. And what you see here is a significant 6% reduction in projected reduction in sales tax collections, a 20% reduction in license and permit revenues, and a 12% reduction in charges for services, which are primarily driven by decreased parks and rec fees and charges. What we always try to do, or what we've tried to do historically as a town, is just be very conservative with our revenue forecast. I think that has served us well in the past in navigating times of high volatility like we saw during the Great Recession. And really there's no difference here. We are in a very volatile market, very volatile economy, and we wanted to be very conservative with revenue forecasts. You know, what you see here on the bottom bullet point there is an increase in state shared revenues. And I'd like to kind of address that for a second and why that is, whereas you see the decreases in charges for services and license and permit fees and sales taxes. The difference here is that state shared revenues are on about a two-year lag because they're highly dependent upon state income tax revenues. And of course, if you think back about a couple of years ago, the economy was for the state of Arizona was in a much different position than it is currently. So really, we're seeing the impacts of that lag for the forecast for next fiscal year. Next. Again, whereas versus the last slide where we dealt with general fund revenues, here we're kind of highlighting the expenditure highlights for the general fund specifically. And what you see here are lower operations and maintenance costs by about 11.5%. We have chosen to freeze about seven positions, vacant positions through the middle of next fiscal year. There are no step or merit increases included in the budget before you this evening. And I've already mentioned this, but the $5 million in contingency is included. And then we also loaded in about $1 million, which impacts both revenue and expenditures in CARES Act expenditures. Here we're just dealing with the expenditures. But really what we're attempting to do or accomplish with that is leverage some of the federal CARES Act monies to really try to put together a plan and assist our business community with getting back on their feet as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And then finally, there is a 5% transfer, general fund transfer to the capital fund. And that really is a financial policy item for the town that really protects the town as it continues to grow and develop and evolve. Allows us to really deal with our necessary capital items and to put that money away and to utilize it for capital expenditures. And with that, I'd like to turn it back over to Mary to finish out the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dave. Next. So, Mayor, members of council, I think it's really important to note some general approaches to our town operations and how we tackled what we knew would be a more challenging budget for this fiscal year based on the economic crisis, the COVID crisis, and the resulting economic impacts. First of all, we wanted to focus on continuing our service levels to the community, minimizing those impacts to the community as much as possible. Now, obviously, when there are closures or restrictions, it's our obligation to make sure that we follow them. But, in general, our costs continue to be the same. And so, but that was certainly first and foremost at the top of the list as we were looking at potential reductions. We also were very conservative in terms of how we approached personnel. And as Mr. Gephardt mentioned, we are freezing and we don't have any merit and steps. We wanted to do our best to try to keep our employees whole. And so we're thankfully able to plan for no layoffs or furloughs in this upcoming budget. And in fact, because of our employee participation in our wellness program, we have been able to stabilize our health benefits for the coming fiscal year and increase our contribution toward the high deductible health plan version for employees should they choose to participate in that. So that is that's something that will assist them. And we are planning at least one what we call premium holiday. That's where for a paycheck that the deductions for their health insurance won't come out. And if the experience goes well, as you know, and maybe our community doesn't know, we are self-funded. So we pay the direct costs for all of the claims. And if our employees are healthier, then our costs go down. And that, of course, is not just a benefit to the town, but it's a very, very much so a benefit to our employees. And so we wanted to be able to help them in that regard. The budget does include one new position in our water utility department. They have not added new positions in a number of years, and each year the system grows as our new number of connections increases and the need for technology. And we're just at that time where we need to add that additional person to continue to operate that system. Also, I've included the authorization, but will not move forward with it unless our resources and our projections come in as planned, but the conversion of a part-time IT, really it's a help desk position, to a full-time position. As you can imagine, with this change in how we're doing business, like Zoom, the reliance on our technology team to assist with getting everything done has been absolutely tremendous, and they have really stepped up their game, and they were already behind in terms of the number of help desk tickets. So this is something that we need to do hopefully this coming fiscal year. We do have some reclassifications, which is something we look at every year, for about 16 positions. Again, I'll have more detail for you next week at our study session, but those are based on actual work performed and internal equity issues that are included. As Dave mentioned in his presentation, we want to see if we can take advantage of utilizing CARES funding to help our businesses. And so I'll be coming back to the council here in the near future with some options on what that might look like. We do need to continue with capital replacements and maintenance. And in fact, on a slide here in just a few minutes, I'm going to go through. There's really nothing sexy in our plan for next year, but we own assets in the organization, in the town, and it's our responsibility to maintain those assets. And so we've got some replacements, we have some repairs that need to be made, and I'll review those with you briefly. We've already touched on the contingency. One thing that I do just want to mention for the community is that $5 million contingency is not a slush fund, and any expenditures out of that contingency would require council approval. So it is really a protection. It's something that we need to do since we have very limited data with which to make our projections. And should it be necessary to use any of that contingency in the future, then I would come back to the council with a budget amendment. And then finally, one of my top goals was to maintain that 25% reserve that the town council has established years ago, and we've been able to keep that. The reserve is for unforeseen circumstances, but at this juncture and this early into this economic crisis, we don't know if this is a 6-month issue, an 18-month issue, or something longer than that. And so it's really my job to make sure that the council has some availability to tap into resources in the future to mitigate any additional cuts at the community, because it really cuts in our operations mean cuts to the to community services. And so we've been able to deal with this budget, and I think that's the responsible and prudent thing to do at this time. Next. Just a couple of highlights. So as you know, you have 7 different focus areas, and there are a number of different objectives. I believe the mayor knows by heart how many objectives that we have, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 plus. So I wanted to, and all of them require some emphasis of resources, whether that's staff, time, or whether that's actual cash. Many of them are already underway. And of course, we provide you with an update on where we are, and we just did that in February. There are a few that we are that are going to be delayed as a result of not having the resources in next year's budget. And again, I'll review those with you next fiscal year. But what we are including a few things in these areas, in the area of economic vitality, as you know, the town council has already contributed $60,000 along with Pima County toward the construction of an incubator in the Innovation Center. As this is a new facility and it's being taken over by the University of Arizona, this is a contribution that may be for a short time to ensure that they have the resources that they need to stand up this incubator for the benefit of the community, which is really job growth and job development. We also will continue our partnership with Visit Tucson with a recommended $275,000. Now that is down by $25,000 from our current contract, and we know that our bed tax resources will be reduced, but we also recognize the value that Visit Tucson brings and in helping us to fill those beds in the future at our hotels. Also, we're continuing our $40,000 contract with the Chamber. It's more important now than ever to continue to focus on our business community and what we can do. And in fact, we're working very closely with the chamber right now on a number of initiatives, not the least of which is a robust ShopOV website that should be going up here very, very soon. In recreation and culture, you will hear very shortly about the needs assessment. And the next step in that process is the development of a master plan. So we won't be able to complete that whole process next year, but we will continue to move forward with it with $30,000 so we can continue some assistance with our consultant. And then I'll touch upon some additional capital investments here in just a moment. In the area of public safety, Chief Riley is continuing a very strong focus on training and also the safety of our employees in this environment of COVID. And again, we need to make some repairs. So we will be replacing the consoles, the emergency communications, our 911 consoles that are 17 years old. They need to be replaced. So we've included that in the budget. Land use, there's a number of objectives in your strategic leadership plan regarding code changes, some of which will be coming forward to you in July. And we'll update you again a little more next week. Next. As I mentioned earlier, we have a significant number of assets that we own. And so having high quality water, roads, and town assets, what we will be coming forward with to you at your June 2nd meeting, 3rd, excuse me, the water utility director and I, as I mentioned in my town manager message in the budget, we are recommending that the planned or proposed potable water increase be suspended for fiscal year 2021, and that the recommended reduction in the reclaimed rate be moved forward as planned. So, and again, you'll have more information at your next meeting. There are a number of water utility capital investments, several million dollars worth, our ongoing pavement preservation. And then, of course, we have a number of different just facility repairs and asset maintenance that are included in our public works budget. Under effective and efficient government, I'm really happy with the progress that we have made in implementing our townwide process improvement initiative, OV Peak Performance, over the last 2 years. In fact, it has been particularly successful, and the training that we have done with our employees over the last year has proven to be very effective as we've applied it to this, this situation where there's had to be a lot of innovation, and that really sparked our interest in wanting to take advantage of the synergies that have developed between our strategic initiatives function and technology, such that I am going to be doing a small reorganization and moving our strategic initiatives function under technology, under Chuck Boyer, who's a very talented director of ours, and doing what many communities across the country are now doing, which is innovation and technology. So we're really very excited about that, and I look forward to sharing more with you about our plans for that in the future. In the area of town finances, as our chief financial officer mentioned, we continue to be very conservative. That is something that has prepared us well to weather the storm. And while we have not specifically included an additional investment in the PSPRS liability to help pay it down, what I am committed to do is we see how our revenue projections are coming in during the course of the fiscal year. And if they're strong, it looks like we're going to be doing well, then the council will have the option to utilize some of that contingency fund to apply toward a payment, an additional payment in PSPRS. And we do have this scheduled for discussion at your June 17 meeting, when we bring forward to you the PSPRS updated policy that the council is required to adopt every year. Next. So just to dig a little bit deeper into capital, as Mr. Gebhardt mentioned, the council does require the dedication of 5% of your general fund revenues to capital every year. And your policy also states that excess reserves are for really those one-time purchases, capital, or paying down the public safety retirement system unfunded liability. So while this year we are tapping into some of those excess reserves to help with operations, it is a unique time, and it is not something that should be a regular practice. We, because of prior transfers, because we've built up a balance in the capital fund and the additional, and again, every year we transfer excess revenues into capital. That is our primary way of funding our capital. So we're continuing to do that this fiscal year. Last year it was over $2 million. This year it's about $900,000 in addition to that 5%, which will allow for a total funding of $3.6 million in capital projects. Some of those are carryover funds. We've got a few projects that we're just not sure are going to be done by the end of the fiscal year. And so we put some carryover money in there just in case. For example, we've ordered all of the playground things for Naranja Park. We're just not sure it's going to be delivered by June 30. If it comes in July 1, it has to be paid for out of the next fiscal year budget. So we want to protect ourselves. And so we've included some carryover funds for that, for the generator at the Emergency Operations Center, and two replacement wells that the water utility has not been able to complete in the current fiscal year. We also are continuing with our vehicle replacement program. We've got every year we include money in the budget toward a vehicle reserve that gets deposited into the capital fund. So we pay for all of our capital maintenance, all of our major capital, and all of our vehicles out of our capital fund. And so, you know, one of the things that I think is important is we keep up with that. We have reduced the number of vehicles, but if we reduce it too far, then what happens is it just catches up with us in the future. You know, we've got, I think in the police department alone, somewhere around 80 or I think around 100 vehicles, maybe more. And if we don't continue to turn those over and replace them on a regular schedule, then we really get hit hard at some point in the future. So I'm grateful that this savings process that was established well before I got here is giving us the capacity to be able to continue to make these vehicle replacements. Next. So again, I'm not gonna go blow by blow. I just wanna highlight a couple of items. Again, these are all maintenance or replacement projects, everything from replacing the current permitting software that is no longer serving us well and will not be supported any longer by our software vendor. Some hardware replacements, I mentioned the consoles, repairing the multi-use path at the marketplace. One thing I did want to point out that's a really exciting project is a new batting cage and bullpen area at Riverfront Park, and that is going to be in a partnership with our I apologize, it's our softball organization. So I will give you more detail next week, but they're contributing $67,000, and then we'll have a jointly developed facility that will really benefit our community. The Steam Pump Ranch Garage was also mentioned earlier by one of our community members. And we've got to do some sidewalk issues here on our main campus, as well as some wayfinding. People get lost on this campus very, very easily. That is our number one complaint. And I mentioned the vehicle replacements. And the non-general fund, again, we did include, per the council's direction, we will be planning to do the irrigation design for both the Kenyatta and Conquistador courses, and then the initial construction that would happen in the May-June timeframe for the irrigation replacement on the Conquistador course. And then the last little bit of our La Cholla widening, we've got our regular pavement preservation, and as I mentioned, a number, millions of dollars, $9.3 million for 22 different capital projects in the water utility. And that does include the use of impact fees. Next. So again, just to visually show you where our capital investments go, you can see that the two biggest pieces of the pie are the water system, which we can expect a huge amount of assets. And we're also working on the Northwest Recovery Recharge Delivery System. Peter Abraham always wonders if I'm going to be able to get that acronym correctly, but I've learned it. We've got $6 million in streets and roads. Again, that is a combination of PAG money, impact fee money, and also HERF money. And then we've got parks and rec, our vehicles, and everything else. And so again, I think that's really a great visual for you to see where are our assets and how much do we need to spend in order to maintain those assets. Next. Mayor and Council, I just want to close by, again, thanking the team, and not just our finance team. And these are some of the awards and accolades for our finance department. These are really a reflection of you as a council, and the work that you put in and the policy decisions that you make. We develop the paper, but really it's your leadership that allows us to be able to brag about these different awards. And so our entire department leadership team has done a tremendous job this year under very difficult circumstances of working remotely and looking at budget cuts and trying to figure out how to deal with closed facilities and all of the different things that came up in an emergency. And they have been nothing but collaborative. So I'm really proud to lead this team of professionals, and I would be happy to answer any preliminary questions that you may have about this presentation, or we certainly would be happy to make note of those issues and be prepared to address them at the budget study session next week. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. So I'd like to open it to council. I'm seeing hands raised. If you would like to ask questions or make comments, if you would please hit the raise your hand item. First, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Hi, thanks. I know that this is just a preliminary kind of overview of the budget and that we'll be digging into it more in the future. And the council just received the budget in the past couple days, kind of same time as the public. And that was kind of what led me to my concern. And I just got my, I can't see it with my background, but I just got my budget book. And in taking a look at the schedule, which I did have some concerns for before, I feel like now as I was taking a look at it, I went to consult, well, when is the Budget and Finance Commission going to be taking a look at this and doing that more in-depth study? And when is the council going to have an opportunity to keep doing that in-depth study? And I found that, our budget study session is scheduled for a week from now. And the Budget and Finance Commission doesn't have any sessions on the budget until June 2nd. And so I felt like that was kind of putting the cart before the horse, because for me, the entire purpose of having a commission is to be able to hear their thoughts and comments and on these things before I give my feedback to the town. And I remember from last year, the study session was a lot of the opportunity that we had to really dive in on it and give the feedback. And so I'll speak for myself. I don't feel like a week is enough time for me to digest the entire budget and be prepared to give all my comments in a study session next week, particularly when the Budget and Finance Commission hasn't met. So in that regard, I had a suggestion, and I was thinking maybe we could have the Budget and Finance Commission meet before we do, and they could take our spot on the 27th. And we could go ahead and have our study session on the 28th so that we could have the opportunity to hear from them. And then we could consider adding an additional study session for the council on June 10th, which would then give us a chance to really have some additional time to digest all the things from the Budget and Finance Commission and from the first study session. And then we'd have a couple more weeks to study, ask follow-up questions with the different departments, and have a study session on June 10th before we consider tentative budget adoption on June 17th. So that was kind of just something I was thinking through today as I was trying to study the budget that I picked up yesterday. And I thought, you know, I feel like I really need a little more time to digest this. And I'd really like to be able to have the commission have their meeting before the council's study session. So I'll put that out as a suggestion, maybe to the rest of the council and the mayor and things to respond to. Thanks.
Thank you. Council Member Jones-Ivy.
Can you hear me?
It's a little light, Joyce, if you could either, I don't know if it raised the volume on your end or.
Raise the volume. Can you hear me now?
That's better, but if you can raise it more, don't hesitate.
Okay, well, that's about as much as I can raise it, but I'll at least try to speak a little bit louder. Kind of wave at me if you don't hear me. First, Mary, I want to thank you and your team. I realize it takes a lot of work to produce this prospective budget, and I do appreciate that. I want to acknowledge the fact that we are down at least $10 million on our projected budget for the up and coming year. I guess my concern centers around the fact that our revenue sources don't seem to be really dependable to me, and the projections I'm not real comfortable with. And what I would really like to see in this budget is a prioritization of what we absolutely need to spend and what we don't have to spend. Because I'm not comfortable with what I'm looking at, because it really doesn't seem like we have really kind of tightened up our belt here. And given the fact that there's a prospective second wave coming through, we don't know what's going to happen next year either. So I would really like to see a prioritization of what has to be done now and what can be done later. You know, and if we can at least move forward with something that feels a little bit more realistic without us having to go into our contingency fund, I'd feel more comfortable with that. And I also agree with our vice mayor. It's going to take, I really would like to hear from our budget and finance committee before voting on this, and to meet on the 27th and then the next day is just a little bit too fast for me personally to be able to really delve back into this and to get a real comprehensive understanding. Thank you.
Ms. Jacobs, and I apologize, can you respond to the vice mayor? And then if you have response, some of this was more comments than question, but let's go back and.
Sure, absolutely, Mr. Mayor, thank you. Certainly we'd be happy to reschedule any meetings based on council direction. As you know, this is not how we ordinarily do this. We are a little off in terms of our schedule. We originally had plan to deliver the budget to you 2 weeks ago and start the budget study sessions earlier. So our you know, our schedule is just a little bit off, and we tried to use the time slots that we had. But that was one of the reasons why we pushed the adoption of the tentative budget to the 17th, in order to provide you with some additional time should you need to talk about it on the second or hold an additional study session. So we stand ready to serve you and to do whatever it is that that is required. I will mention that last year, now admittedly, the last year was the first year of the Budget and Finance Commission. And again, they did not receive the budget any sooner than you. Their job is not involved in the development of the budget. They serve you as the council. They do not provide me with the advice and counsel. I have my team to do that. So their job is to review what we provide and to provide you with advice and counsel. And so we can suggest that they have another session. They listened in on the study session items last year in order to not duplicate the need to have to do it twice. That was kind of the whole point, was everybody was going to hear the same thing. And so, for your consideration, Mayor, members of council, we could move forward. The Budget and Finance Commission were already planning to participate and listen in on your study sessions, which is really for the presentation for some of those initial questions. Perhaps, we could continue that, but schedule an additional study session for the council maybe a week or two later to give them an opportunity to have their own conversation. I offer that for your consideration. And then Councilmember Jones-Ivey, we will be happy next week to go into more detail about why we feel confident in our very conservative projections. If there is something specific or data that you have to indicate your concern level with a particular projection that we're making in terms of revenues, I would welcome the opportunity to go over what those concerns may be. We've sifted through our projections. We do feel very comfortable with what we know right now. And that's one of the reasons why we have that contingency in there. But again, one of the things that I want to mention for the council is this year is going to be a little bit different. We have asked our departments to put together a monthly spending plan, and that will enable us, as we collect information month by month, if it's starting to look not so good, that we can take actions early on in the process in order to make those reductions. So, you know, putting together a must-have, a lot of that is staff related. As you saw from our budget, we have a number of staff people. Our budget is staff heavy. We have a lot of O&M that, electricity and that sort of thing. We really can't cut gasoline and those types of things. And so it ends up being a very collaborative process with the departments to say, hey, we need to cut $1 million. How are we going to do that? And we kind of sit down together and do that. But again, if there's some specific concerns about projections that you have that you think are off, I would welcome the opportunity to delve into those a little bit deeper with you, whether on an individual basis or at a study session.
Okay, we can certainly do that, Mary.
Thank you.
Councilmember Solomon.
Thank you. My first question is for David. David, it's my understanding TPT tax reporting, which of course is a major portion of the town's income, is 1 month behind. So the report that we received at the end of March for March was for the prior month. And what we just received at the end of April was for March. And of course, the big question is what happened in April, which we will receive at the end of May. So two quick questions is, my understanding is that the March results were not that significant of a drop. And when will we have the April results this month? Because that'll be a major factor into us knowing what the trend is. I mean, assuming that there's not a second wave or something, which no one can predict.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Councilor Solomon. Thank you for the question. We are already starting to see those April results come in, and to be quite frank and honest with you, they are stronger than what we anticipated. I think that's primarily due to the purchasing habits of our residents and trying to stock up and prepare for the crisis, for the pandemic, trying to shelter in place. So we did see a little bit of an increase in our sales tax collections. On on the purchase side, you know, where we saw the significant decrease or decline was obviously in our bed tax, our hotel tax revenues. I mean, those we did see a pretty significant decline in, but in terms of our sales taxes in general, and we haven't done a deep dive into the data yet, but we just received that data literally a couple days ago. So we haven't had a chance to really do a deep dive into it yet and figure it out. But generally, I think we saw people trying to stock up and trying to survive as they sheltered in place, and that drove sales taxes a little bit higher than what we were anticipating. So that was a positive sign. Now, with that being said, moving forward, I don't know that we can count on that for May and June. I would anticipate that we're going to see some pretty severe declines in those months as the store, you know, unless the stores can restock. I mean, I think we've all seen the stores and the empty shelves and all of that, you know, but we'll see. I mean, as things start to open back up, that also will have a mitigating impact there. So that's kind of where that stands. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. So for our study session on the 27th and 28th, you've got the data, you'll be able to go through it and have more insight. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And regarding that, I'm in favor of keeping our schedule. We're talking about policy issues here, which is the council's responsibility. And we managed very well from the past 8 or so, 9 years without input from a budget and finance committee. We've run surpluses. We've increased our contingency fund tremendously, putting us in this fantastic financial position. I think it's sufficient for budget and finance to listen in on the study sessions on the 27th and 28th. They can then meet after that and provide us with their input. But I don't think it's prudent for council to change their whole budget schedule based on wanting these folks to review the same material we're reviewing. And frankly, their input should not be policy inputs. That's not their job. That's council's job. And council's done just well. It's time for council to roll up our sleeves and get to work. It's a different situation, and everyone on council's had at least one budget cycle. Some of us have had many more, and we should be able to be ready in a week from now to have looked over the budget. And the study session is exactly that, for us to go through and understand the budget over those 2 days. And we've always needed 2 days in the past to do that. We don't get into the actual discussion and public input on it and making decisions until several weeks after that. So I think the current timeline is very well. I don't think there's any reason for council to try to basically abdicate its responsibility. We're here. This is one of the major things we do every year. So I would say we continue with that. And actually, just one other mention, and that is, you know, our staff, our police have really done an amazing job. I hate to see us eliminating, particularly the STEP program, which the lower ranking and newer police officers, younger police officers, rely upon when they hire on, and cost of living increases. Now, what I would suggest is that we commit to re-reviewing our situation at the beginning of the second quarter on October 1st, whichever our most recent council meeting is after October 1st, to reevaluate and see if we cannot reinstitute the STEP program and the cost of living and merit increases. Once again, I know there's obviously going to be some uncertainty, but there's been uncertainty since the day we were born. And it's very encouraging to hear about the sales tax revenues. It's also encouraging, some feedback I've gotten is that our bars and restaurants that have opened have been doing very well. And as David pointed out, hopefully the retail, I would assume they have stock if they've been shut down for so long. I would hope that they would do very well also once they reopen. So that's those are my comments. So thank you very much.
Council Member Pena.
Okay. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My screen is awfully dark, so I can't tell. The video is doing the same thing. I'd like to, first of all, David, I'm glad you're here. This is our first go around with you now with the budget. So thank you. Everybody did a great job putting this together. I know it's a lot of work. So thanks to all of you. With regard to Vice Mayor Barrett's comments, I can understand what she's saying, that this is a lot of content to get in such a short period of time. I also agree with Councilmember Solomon. So what I would propose is that we do keep our timeline, but I don't think it would be a bad thing to have an additional meeting, and maybe it would help Councilmember Jones-Ivy as well, and maybe do it the first week. I know I looked at the calendars. I was sitting here, and the 10th, we have a council meeting the first week and the third week. So maybe we have an additional meeting, and that'll give us time, along with the Finance and Budget Commission, to get our arms wrapped around this so that we do have some comfortability and we're not prolonging the process. And I think that's a fair thing to do that would hopefully help everybody in this, right? Kind of meet everybody's expectations. I also, as I was listening, and I can understand Councilmember Jones-Ivy's concern about the projections, because we are in a unusual place. And I think that the contingency, while the $5 million is just that, it's a contingency and it may not be used. Is that a fair comment, David or Mary? Or that it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to use it. We're approving it. So in the event that we do need it, it's available.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Pena, that is correct. It is not something that there are any allocations associated with it at all. And if there are any, if there is a need to use any of it, that would require a budget amendment on the part of the council.
Okay, thank you. So, but at the same time, I do agree that we need to really kind of hone in and make sure. And I like the fact that we are doing a month to month recordation of all of the financials so that we are on top of it. So I think that might help some of that uncertainty that we're going through until we get a grasp on it. And my other question is, there was a report, Mary, that for the capital needs, there was a 10-year, I guess, inventory that was completed. Is that correct? Or that
our capital,
the capital needs for our assets,
yes,
right,
that's
for 10
correct.
Years. So what I would like to know is, how was that capital needs inventory, how does that align with what we have projected or what we have planned for capital improvements, whether they're to do just that, improve, or CapEx, whatever we're doing, or new, what I would call new projects. How did that align? Because when I looked at last year's compared to this year's, some of it looks like it may have been moved up. And it goes back to what Councilmember Jones-Ivy is saying is, and I guess it's more like, is it a nice to have or a need to have, and prioritizing what do we really need to be doing? So I would just like to know how that aligned and how these capital expenditures were prioritized.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, members of council, Councilmember Pena. First of all, we have additional, what I'll call capital maintenance items that are in the public works budget under facilities. So there's another, and don't quote me on the number, but $200,000 or $250,000 of projects that are the smaller projects. They're the under the $50,000. And our plan, our 10-year plan, helped guide us in terms of those investments. What we do with we have a 5-year capital plan, and that's included in the budget every year. And of course, we revisit it every single year because things change. Something deteriorates more. Oh, that kind of moves up in the slot. We have a capital committee consisting of senior department managers that carefully look over all of the capital requests and collectively prioritize them based on again, the criteria. What is the need? You know, are these something that can hold off? What is the chances of it costing more money in the future? If we didn't make those investments now. And so, you know, oftentimes there's a one-off, but I would say that a number of, and I'll give you one example, you know, the sidewalk repairs on the town campus have been on our list for like 4 years. And so, you know, those finally get to the point where it's like, okay, we've waited, and those end up needing to be elevated. And so, you know, we can go over more at next week in our, sure, in the budget session on some of the details, but it's a balance. This capital committee gets together and says, okay, we have this much money and what are the priorities? And in fact, they prioritize them and scored them into those top, medium, and, you know, could wait kind of thing. Okay. You know, I didn't even share with you what the total requests were, but we certainly are not getting to all of the items that were requested.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have no more questions or statements.
Thank you. Councilmember Rodman.
That's the questions we all have, and that's what the study sessions are for as far as I see. But in terms of the scheduling, it seems to me that the best use of the time is for both the Budget and Finance Commission and the council to go through the study sessions. Even though it's our study session, they certainly have every right to sit in and understand, and then let them go ahead, as Vice Mayor Barrett suggested, having their meeting prior to our next meeting after we're done with our study session, so that at least they can take a look at it and say, okay, do the numbers make sense, et cetera. My experience in the 4 years is not that in the study sessions, we certainly don't make any decisions, so we certainly don't vote. We can certainly give opinion of what we think once we've heard some answers, but the real work in terms of deciding whether there's going to be changes and whether or not we want to approve them happens after those study sessions. And that would also put it after the Budget and Finance Commission has had a chance to take and do its duty, which is looking at the numbers. Do they make sense? Are the assumptions right in terms of how we get to the numbers? The kinds of things that a budget commission would be looking at and not a policy thing to Council Member Solomon. So I think we can do that. And the June 10th number or date, I think, assuming it's available, makes sense to me to add another date for us to look at it prior to the 17th, which is now scheduled for our preliminary passage. So I'd like to see us stick with the 27th and 28th, and I think it can serve the purpose of the Budget and Finance Commission as well as the council. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Council Member Rodman, I just would like to ask a question for clarification, because we do have the precedent of the meeting with the Budget and Finance Commission and the council when we were reviewing the PSPRS. It was essentially a joint study session. The Budget and Finance Commission members, we kind of shared the opportunity to ask questions and so on and so forth. Are you suggesting that on the 27th and 28th, if we had a second study session, that the Budget and Finance Commission could be a part of that dialogue?
That wasn't my suggestion. I can think about that only because we as the council are the ones that have to ultimately make the decision, and we need to be sure we have the opportunity to ask all the questions, get into the discussion that we need. I'm a little concerned if we expand that to another five people who are really obviously very interested and have a job to do, it may be unwieldy, it may be awkward to do in a budget. And I think there is time for them to do it after they've learned what we've learned. But I think it really needs to be at least that's my reaction to your question.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify. I thought that may be the case, and I had thought about that possibility, but I, in 12 people, and just given the nature of the topic, I didn't see how we could share that evening. I do want to, as Ms. Jacobs was and Mr. Gephardt were making the presentation, I did make a note on the PowerPoint on the budget timeline about when will the Budget and Finance review the budget.
Right.
I think the suggestion by the Vice Mayor It doesn't really change the schedule. It in terms of we're still the 17th would be the tentative budget. The July 1st would be the final budget. It would seem that what that does do is that it provides the Budget and Finance Commission to meet, because we know, because of our policies, we can't seek input from the Budget and Finance Commission members individually. And I certainly value all of our boards and commissions and the voluntary role that they play in our community. For example, the Water Utility Commission, they, as a commission, they made a recommendation to us about the potable water rate and the reclaimed water rate. So I value their input and the hard work that they did. So I have to admit, I would value the Budget and Finances Commission's review and feedback to us as a council. I don't know logistically if they could meet on the 27th as suggested, and then we have our study session on the 3rd and possibly the 10th. It really doesn't change the schedule. It's just a matter of providing the opportunity for Budget and Finance, because I wouldn't really be in favor of having them be part of the discussion whenever we have our study session. I just think it's too many people. But that's my opinion about it.
Am I still?
Yes, you are.
The only thing that I think is the sooner we get into the study session for us, number one, it will start to help the finance staff to begin to work on whatever changes they sense are needing to happen or would like to happen, and be able to be more ready for the next time that we come into session and we move our input until the following week. It puts it that much farther behind, not behind, but that much later in the process, for us to be starting to say to them through our questions and our suggestions and their answers, you know, what changes from what's been presented tonight are going to be. And I don't see, again, please don't think I don't value the Budget and Finance Commission. I do. They have a job to do, and they have something with their particular expertise that we need. But I think leaving the schedule with the 27th to the 28th, giving them a time to meet between that and the time that we would then meet about the budget, gives that time for them to learn from the study sessions, and also for them to meet and be able to make recommendations. If we put that extra June 10th meeting in, I think that gives us more time to be sure we understand, you know, what came out of the study sessions, but also what came from the Budget and Finance Commission. So that, I think we need those times, and I think the earlier we do it, the better it is to give us time to move from what we saw today to what we'll ultimately want to try to approve by the end of June. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
One thing that just occurred to me is that I've lined up all of our department directors and the key staff to be available to council for next Wednesday and Thursday. With summer season and people making plans, I would want to ensure that I had everyone for, if we're going to have to basically do the presentation twice, once to the Budget and Finance Commission and once to the council, I would just want to make sure that we had, you know, all of the capacity. I do think, you know, I know we put the second meeting just in case, but based on what I'm hearing tonight, I think it's probably pretty well assured. And perhaps, you know, I would characterize the study sessions for next week as really being an opportunity to answer questions on the part of council, and perhaps that deliberation that was referenced by the vice mayor in terms of specific input could happen. We could have two more study sessions. We could do a study session after your regular meeting on the 3rd already, and then we could do another one on the 10th. That would give you a total of 4 opportunities before it comes to you for, you know, for the tentative adoption. And just a reminder to council that the tentative adoption is only setting the cap There still is that 2 more weeks between tentative adoption and final budget where additional adjustments can be made. So we're talking about a 6-week window here, which I, you know, I hope would give plenty of time for Budget and Finance Commission could also have an additional meeting if they chose to. They can deliberate and bring any recommendations to you at that time. So just for your discussion and consideration.
Thank you. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I didn't get to respond to some of the comments responding to me. I want to thank my other council members for being willing to come together on June 10th. I think that would be helpful for us to have another study session. I want to clarify what my suggestion was. My suggestion was that we give our date on the 27th to the Budget and Finance Commission, and then we still meet on the 28th, which is already a time that's set aside and it doesn't push us back a week. It's only, you know, one day between those two. And then we meet additionally on the 10th after we've had a little bit more time to look through those things and digest, and then go to the tentative budget adoption the following week. And I want to clarify kind of the role that I feel like commission plays for me, and I would assume for a lot of the council members, because I see a lot of the council members attending our various boards and commission meetings. And I know that for me, I also listen in to several of them after the fact if I wasn't able to attend live. And as all the staff knows, and probably most of the council, I'm a person with a million questions, and I love to have answers to all those questions that I have. And so when I listen in on board and commission meetings, what that does for me is it helps me get about 50% of my questions answered without me ever having to go to staff or bring it to a council meeting and things like that. And so I'm just able to get that sort of the questions answered of the sort of basic and preliminary things. It's not that it's not putting off a policy direction. I would never do that. Of course, I intend to do my job, dive into the budget, and help with the rest of the council to set the policy direction for the town. But we talk about like the Budget and Finance Commission listening in on our study session. Well, for me, it goes the other way around. I listen in on the boards and commissions, and then I'm able to glean whatever information, questions that they asked. And then I can say, okay, check, 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 check. All these questions were answered adequately by staff. I still have a question about this one. And then I'm able to bring that one forward for council meetings. So that's why, to me, I don't see for the Budget and Finance Commission to listen to us being the most important point, because actually we want as independent a review as possible, but instead I want to be able to hear what they have to say before I weigh in on the study session. So I was just concerned about how far out their meeting was compared to both of our study sessions being back to back in only a week, and then we didn't have something else. So maybe there's some compromise solution, but my original suggestion was just that it wouldn't change anything other than adding a meeting on June 10th in terms of staff availability, etc., because we would still meet on May 28th, the following day. And then I would be planning on following along on May 27th as the Budget and Finance Commission asked their questions about the budget.
So I think the proposal is that clarification is moving the Budget and Finance Commission to May 27th, can have the council's budget study session on the 28th. We have our meeting on June 3rd, which we could have a second study session as part of that meeting. Presumably staff would be available. And then at that point, we can determine if a June 10th study session is necessary. It may or may not be, but we would still hold to the June 17th date for the tentative budget, with our goal on July 1st for the final budget. I think at this point, I'd like to get, is Grant Cohen, is that our attorney, Mr. Cohen?
It is.
Okay, I just didn't recognize, I think of you as Gary, not Grant.
Yeah, this is, my son has his name. I haven't figured out how to change it. I just wanted to, as you were speaking there, I started to have a feeling like perhaps there was gonna be a proposal to vote on this issue. I just wanna make sure we're not going there since—
Not getting a vote, but can I don't really have a sense, Gary, of the—
Okay.
And can I just check in with council about—
Yeah, just check in, but and then quickly, and then we probably need to move on from it. I know the town manager is listening attentively to everybody, and—
Okay, well, I can't
allow a vote, so that's all.
I wasn't going to ask for a vote, but so let me just say that Councilmember Jones-Ivey and Councilmember Nicholson, I don't have a sense of your thoughts about this discussion. So Councilmember Solomon, I think I have an idea of where you stand. Councilmember Rodman, I think I have an idea where you stand. And Councilmember Pena, I'm not sure I really have a sense of, and so I'm not wanting to give direction if I don't have a clear idea of what, for the town manager as well. I'm guessing, Ms. Jacobs, you don't really have a sense at this point as to a direction here.
Mr. Mayor, I am listening carefully. I think one thing that we also don't know is whether or not our members of the Budget and Finance right. Commission would be available. And I wanted to clarify, so the expectation potentially would be that we would give the same presentation on the 27th to the Budget and Finance Commission, and then the same presentation to council on the 28th. And then we would just take questions from each group.
So with the June 2nd Budget and Finance Commission, that would have been the presentation that you would be giving to council? Is that?
No, actually what we our expectation to the Budget and Finance Commission was that they would dial in and listen so that we wouldn't have to duplicate. That's why we asked them to participate. So they may very well be prepared and ready, but their plan was, at least based on what Mr. Gephardt had heard back from the members, is that they have received the budget, that they were going to listen in on the presentation, and that they were then going to come with their questions to their June 2nd meeting.
Okay. So Councilmember Jones-Ivey, I'm just checking in to get a sense. This isn't a vote, but to get some idea. And just to the town manager's point, we don't know if the Budget and Finance Commission could even meet on the 27th. Right now they're scheduled to meet on June 2nd. So in the event that they were not, we would just fall back to the June 2nd schedule and we would have our study session on the 27th. So Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
If they are able to meet any earlier, I definitely would be in favor of that. If not, given the schedule, the way it's set up right now, June 2nd, if they can meet or possibly be a part of our study session, I would definitely be in favor of that.
All right, Councilmember Nicholson.
Okay, I'm unmuted. I'll try to follow Gary and not make any sense of a vote of anything, but what I would say is our Budget and Finance Commission, the members there are very experienced. I'm only 37. I've only seen the dot-com bubble when I was, you know, graduating high school and the housing crash 2008, but these people have been leaders in business community for many, many years. I mean, they've seen probably the savings loan crisis, the tech bubble, everything else. And I would like to lean on their experience of seeing how their own businesses have gone through recessions and seeing what kind of advice they come up with. I definitely try and surround myself with people more experienced than me and things that I don't have as much knowledge. And I would love to hear their information, especially going through a Budget and Finance Commission. I've done that once before, but I haven't gone through a global pandemic before, and I'd like to see what kind of knowledge that I can gain from them. And then on a different type of subject, I did want to ask one about the $5 million as a line budget item, not having that assigned to anything. If we didn't put that $5 million in our budget, would we not be able to have access to that $5 million for some emergency funding throughout the year?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson. We are required by state law to only spend within a cap, which is why at the tentative budget, you set a spending cap. So we can only spend within there. So if we don't include that, then we don't have access to it. Even though we may have the reserves available, if we don't include it in the tentative budget and the budget cap, we're not able to use it potentially.
Okay. Yeah, I had one other question. I didn't get through a whole lot because we didn't get it till Monday, but on page 26, it talked about the community center bund fund and had $3 million in the budget for that.
That was last year.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. That was just reflecting what it was last year. We did not include anything in that fund for the current
fiscal 2020 year. Budget. It was budgeted for that. Okay. Correct. Thank you.
Council Member Pena.
I had my hand raised, but I took it back.
Okay.
I was going to clarify what you didn't understand, but it sounds like we got a little bit of a direction. So, okay. Good.
Yeah, I think we have direction on the schedule, Ms. Jacobs, and we'll leave it up to you to see what works.
Okay.
And so this is a presentation. We'll obviously get into more of the details of the budget in the study session. And in the two council sessions, the tentative and then the final budget on the 17th and July 1st. Councilmember Rodman?
I'm not quite sure how to say this, but perhaps this is the concerns of the Zoom meeting. But I have had my hand up, and I did have more to say about the scheduling. You thought you knew what I thought or what I would say, and you don't. And I think maybe it's because we're not in the same place, and it's hard for you to see, you know, what it is we're doing. But I did have more to say. Sure. I think the duplication of effort on part of the staff, we're going to need more than one study session. There are lots of challenges in this coming year. And so to have enough time on the 27th so that we can go through everything we need to go through or can go through in the time allotted, and then know we had the 28th so we can finish. They are not going to present the entire department budgets on the first night. We're not going to get through it. So if the second study session by the council isn't until the next week, it will be after the Budget and Finance Commission meets on the second. So they won't have heard the whole presentation. It means the staff would have to come back and make the rest of that presentation to them. And then the next night, make that same presentation to us. They won't have heard us discuss it. They won't have heard the presentation. So I don't quite understand that part of it. I think we need the time in those first 2 days so that we, and that way there's the highest and best use of the staff. Then the Budget and Finance absolutely has the time on the second, and then they can have another meeting after that. We can have another meeting on the 10th to make sure we've heard everything that they want to say. If we still haven't, we can put another meeting in order to get it done. So, I mean, there is a reason why I think we should really strongly consider to be courteous to the staff. They have worked their brain off and they will continue to do so. And I don't see the reason why the schedule as we have it won't work, adding to Vice Mayor Barrett's suggestion, the June 10th meeting, so that we do have another opportunity after the 3rd to talk about it. And as town manager said, it gives us 6 weeks worth of discussion on this. So I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor, but I think I'm not sure we all, it's hard to do to think about which dates are what dates and who's meeting where. But I think we're not using our time well to make the second study session wait on the 3rd of June. Thank you.
Thank you. Council Member Solomon.
Thank you. Sorry, just unmuted. Actually, Councilmember Rodman said what I wanted to say very well. Scheduling concerns, primary concern is you need 2 days to go through the budget study session. It's broken up into department presentations. If council were to eliminate one of its days for study session, we simply wouldn't have the time needed to hear all the presentations, to ask our questions, and to understand it. So it was what Bill laid out was perfect. We have the 27th, 28th, Budget and Finance has the 22nd. Then we have the 23rd, and I'm absolutely fine with adding June 10th or, if needed, another meeting. So, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Jacobs, thank you for your presentation this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of Council.
Yeah, thank you so much. I will go to the consent agenda. And it was Councilmember Jones Ivey asked this evening that each of the items be read that are part of the consent agenda, partly because of this format. We have folks that are on the phone. So I'm going to ask, I'm going to make a motion, but I'm going to ask the Mr. Standish to read each of the items. So I'd like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda. And Councilmember Rodman?
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. So before we take a roll call vote, Mr. Standish, would you read each of the items, please?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. Item A, minutes approval, May 6th, 2020. Item B, resolution number R20-17, authorizing and approving a high-intensity drug trafficking area HIDA grant agreement with the City of Tucson, allowing for one officer to be assigned to the Pima County HIDA Investigative Task Force. Item C, resolution number R20-18, authorizing and approving a subgrantee agreement between the Town of Oro Valley and the Arizona Department of Homeland Security to fund overtime and mileage under the Operation Stone Garden program. Item D, resolution number R20-19, approving the agenda committee assignment for the period of June 1st, 2020 to August 31st, 2020. Item E, resolution number R20-20, granting authority to the water utility director for securing easements, right of entry and temporary easements for the purposes of designing and constructing a new transmission main and appurtenances from Twin Peaks Road and Lambert Lane alignment to Tangerine Road and Shannon Road. Item F, request for approval to allow a monument sign in the Tangerine Road right-of-way for St. Mark Church, located at 2727 West Tangerine Road. Item G, resolution number R20-21, a right-of-way license agreement between the Town of Oro Valley and the St. Mark Roman Catholic Church to allow a monument sign in the town's right-of-way, as shown in Attachment 1, Exhibit A. Item H, resolution number R20-22, transfer into the Town of Oro Valley's jurisdictional boundaries, the Calle Concordia right-of-way from Calle Loma Linda to La Quinada Drive. Item I, resolution number R20-23, authorizing and approving a model uniform video services agreement between the Town of Oro Valley and Comcast of Arizona Incorporated. And item J, resolution number R20-24, approving a memorandum of understanding for fiscal year 2020-21 between the Town of Oro Valley and the Public Safety Employee Group.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. So I've made a motion to approve the consent agenda. Councilmember Rodman seconded it. Mr. Standish, if we could do a roll call vote for the consent agenda motion.
Yes, sir. Mayor Winfield?
Aye.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones Ivey?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
And Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
The consent motion is approved 7-0. There's no items under the regular agenda. Any future agenda items, council members? Councilmember Solomon?
Yes, thank you. The community has weighed in heavily on the proposed redevelopment of the closed Vistoso golf course. I've heard them loud and clear that their preferred alternative is to have the closed course turned into a preserve, left to return to natural open space and to be used for recreation. Based upon some preliminary discussions with the involved parties, I believe there are multiple viable and timely options that would allow for the potential preservation of the closed golf course. Therefore, I request the following item be placed on the June 3rd regular council meeting agenda. Discussion and possible action of the financial possibilities, both public and private, available to preserve the closed Vistoso golf course as open and recreational space.
Councilmember Rodman.
I'm sorry, it's not. I have another future agenda item. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's not on this one.
Councilmember Pena.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I will second Councilmember Solomon's request for the future agenda item. And I would just like to make a comment. The reason that I am going to second that is because of this particular topic is such an important item within our community. And as we all know, there's a concern with our community being heard or being able to express what's going on with this topic. And so for that reason, I'm going to go ahead and second that motion for the future agenda item.
Other future agenda items? Councilmember Rodman?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, thank you. We've been requested by the National League of Cities to consider not just lobbying our senators and congresspeople for aid to the smaller towns and cities, but to actually consider a resolution of the town council to be able to be presented to the Congress. It's basically that our city, our town is essential in support of fair, direct federal emergency support to reopen and rebuild local American economies. So I would like to have that put on the next available council meeting where we could have discussion and possible action, which I think I think it's the 27th, I'm not sure. But it was going to be, but I would like to see that placed on the next appropriate agenda for us to consider a resolution for the request of the National City of Towns, League of Cities and Towns.
Councilmember Barrett, or Vice Mayor Barrett, excuse me.
I'll second Councilmember Robbins' agenda item. And yeah, that could potentially go on this Friday's agenda, although it may not, we may not have time for that. And then if not, we've got June 3rd, potentially May 28th. So I'll second whenever that fits in.
Councilmember Pena.
Thank you. I'm going to pass. Vice Mayor Barrett did the second.
All right. Councilmember Rodman.
I think a time may be of the essence here, since it's obviously it's making its way through Congress as we speak. So I would just hope that we could put it, I think we could be tagged to our study session as simply a single issue special session of the council. So that's why I said the next available council meeting, so that we can get it in while it still means something to them. Thank you.
Any other future agenda items? Hearing none, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn our regular session. Councilmember Rodman.
I'll second that motion.
Mr. Standish, can we do a roll call vote, please, for adjournment?
Yes. Mayor Winfield?
Aye.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Pena?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodman?
Yes.
And Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
Meeting is adjourned. Before reconvening in our study session, I'd like to take a 10-minute break, and we'll reconvene for our study session at 8:15. Thank you. I'd like to call the study session to order. Mr. Standish, if you would read the first item.
Presentation and possible discussion regarding the Parks and Recreation Needs Assessment Report.
Thank you. Ms. Diaz-Trahan, if you would please begin the presentation.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. I'm pleased to be here this evening to let you know that we have completed phase one of our master plan report. Hold on, I'm getting a little bit of a technical difficulty here. Okay, there we go. So this evening, our consultant, Mike Svets, representing PROS Consulting, will guide us through this presentation, and he will be happy to answer any questions that you may have. And as a reminder, this is phase one. And with that, I will turn it over to Mike. Thank you.
Good evening, folks. I think you can hear me.
We can. Thank you,
Matt. You may not be able to see me, but okay. There we go. Fantastic. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I recognize it's a very heavy lifting night for you all. And having been am a recovering Parks and Recreation Director, having sat in on many council meetings and budget discussions, I recognize the due diligence that you have in front of you. So tonight is really about looking forward. And I think it's important to recognize, even during down economic times and as we look to the future, this is a 5 to 10 year planning horizon for this master plan. It does obviously have to be very much rooted in reality of today. But I think it's important to recognize that we are planning for Oro Valley's Parks and Recreation System 5 to 10 years from now. So next slide. Just very quickly, as Christy had mentioned, this is really just phase one. And phase one summarizes pretty much just the needs assessment component of the master plan. There is going to be a lot of work from a technical perspective that takes place in the second half of this year. So tonight, we're just going to really cover the influencing factors, opportunities to get to know your community through a set of demographic data, the community engagement process, how that all ends up getting summarized into prioritized needs, and then, as I mentioned, next steps. Next slide. And then next slide. So one of the things we recognize is your community currently, based on a 2019 estimate provided by the Environmental Systems Research Institute, which is really a global leader in market data. They recognized as of July 1st of last year that you guys are somewhere in the neighborhood of about 45 to 46,000 folks, and project you to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 55,000 in 15 years. That said, demographic information at this juncture probably could not be any less accurate, just simply because we are as far away from the last official census as we could be. So we recognize the information being presented tonight likely will be massaged and changed a bit as you enter into 2021. But for purposes of this plan, we have to ground it in the data that we have to date. Next slide. So one of the things that obviously we look at from a Parks and Recreation perspective is your age segmentation. And we do recognize that your community is almost half of your community is 55 and older. Whether or not that trend stands and continues to grow over the next 15 years is influenced by obviously a lot of decisions that you all will make from a policy perspective, as well as then the fiscal realities of your community. But based on Esri's information, you are looking at closer to 3 out of every 5 people being 55 and older in the next 15 years. This does not mean that Parks and Recreation just provides services to 55 and older, but it does give you an understanding of where a lion's share of the resources will be directed in the future. Next slide. Another thing that we obviously look at is ethnicity and race. And ethnicity and race has culture to it. And we know that culture often influences parks and recreation experiences. So again, we wanted to take a look at your racial makeup of your community. You are primarily a white alone community, and your largest minority to date is the Asian population, and that will continue to be your largest minority going forward. The Hispanic population is not a standalone racial or ethnic census tract as of today. You can have Hispanic, Latino origin and be white alone or black alone or Asian or some other race. So it is considered to be a subset of the major census tracts captured by the census. And your community currently is at about 14% Hispanic and will grow to about 19%. So one out of every five, it's projected to have Hispanic or one out of every five people in your community is projected to have Hispanic origin as part of their ethnicity and racial background in 15 years. Next slide. From an income level perspective, you do have higher per capita and median household income levels than the state of Arizona and the country as a whole. This simply kind of interpreting this simply means that you are going to have a community that desires and expects high quality experiences, but you also do have an opportunity to recover some of those costs. You know, we have heard several of those comments over the last 5 or 6 months, in particular, some of the comments made tonight with regards to aquatic center fees. It's about really trying to find what the right mix is and what the right balance is when it comes to fee charges and cost recovery for services provided. Next slide. So next slide. We really, I think, did a in concert with the town, have done a really good job of creating a collaborative planning process that engaged the community over the last 6 months in a variety of ways. From focus group and town hall meetings that took place in January pre-COVID to a project website that allowed for open-ended, open portal communication, where people could send in their open-ended questions, concerns, comments, suggestions related to parks and recreation planning over the next 10 years. We did outreach through intercept surveys in which we went to a variety of events and locations throughout the community prior to COVID. And then of course we did some survey work. Next slide. So the first thing we wanted to tee up is just really understand what the key themes were that came out of the conversations that we had with internal stakeholders, external stakeholders, and the 130 plus people that showed up at the town hall meeting in January. Council chambers was quite crowded that night. One of the things that really kind of jumped out at us during that were consistent themes that weaved in and out of the conversations is that there was a lot of strong advocacy and appreciation for your parks and recreation system. And that is a great thing. You know, there are many communities that we walk into and we change that word advocacy. Unfortunately, we end up having to change it to apathy. That is not the case in Oro Valley. There was a stated theme that there is opportunities through park development to generate economic development in your community, even beyond the aquatic center, which right now the aquatic center and the golf course are likely your two largest economic drivers from a parks and recreation systems perspective. Invest and reinvest in the existing park system. Do not just expand the park system and without necessarily taking care of what you already have. Open space preservation, and you will see that come up throughout the conversation this evening. Trails is significant to your community, both paved, unpaved, and hiking trails. But all of this really, the community expressed to us that really needs to be rooted in financial strategies that are sustainable to take care of what you already have, but strategically grow the system in the direction that allows for the greatest level of productivity of park and recreation spaces in the town. Next slide. So as I mentioned, we have a project website. This was launched shortly after the first of the year. The town did a wonderful job of publicizing this, which next slide. Resulted in to date over 926 individual comments that came in from your community. And so what you see in front of you is just a log. It's really the key themes of or areas of interest that people had expressed and the volume of the comments around each one of these key themes. So of course, the preserving golf course at, in the Vistoso Ranch as open space was by far the number one. And I won't read all of these to you, but you can see that there's a lot of diversity here in the comments that were received from your community related to parks and recreation. Next slide. Intercept surveys. These were done in conjunction with the consulting team, primarily Kim Lee Horn out of Tucson, led this effort for us as a consulting team, but we received quite a bit of help from your Parks and Recreation Advisory Board to man the various events and locations that in which these were done. As you can see, they took place from in February and the right up until COVID had taken place and took hold of the community. But we did 9 different dates and times at locations such as Steam Cup Ranch, Safeway, Fry's, Trailheads, Naranja Park, and so on and so forth. And we did end up engaging close to 404 different individuals to participate in what was really a display board dot exercise opportunity to gain input. The purpose of this was really just for folks to take the 4 dots that they were given and prioritize importance of facilities and amenities offered or that could be offered for Parks and Recreation. Next slide. This slide might be a little hard to see, but there is clearly a top 4 open space conservation areas. The next 2 were hard surface trails and soft surface trails, and then swimming pools and splash pads. All 4 of those certainly outpaced all of the other opportunities. Not to say that the others aren't important to your community, they just weren't as important as open space, trails, and swimming pools. Next slide. We also then conducted an online survey. This was done during COVID, April 20th to May 3rd. We did this just simply over a 2-week period, and we had received 372 completed surveys that represented close to 4,500 of your residents. This was done via SurveyMonkey. Next slide. So from this, we basically created some online survey priorities, and you kind of see the key themes that have come out of all of the other community efforts leading up to this survey. On the left-hand side, you see a prioritization of programs and services, special events, fitness programs, and then even open swim water fitness programs kind of rounded out the medium set of priorities. On the facility and amenity chart to the right, again, you can see open space, trails, neighborhood parks, even restroom buildings. You have created a park system and have a park system that, certainly allows for an extended length of experience in which restroom buildings are paramount to the experiences being received in your community. And so they're important and will continue to be important going forward. Next slide. The bulk and the major heavy lifting and the thing that kind of weighted the greatest level of importance when we look at all of our community engagement is the statistically valid survey. I know you as a town are very familiar with these. You understand the, to a certain extent, the methodology behind them. Next slide. They really do kind of create, an opportunity for a scientific and defensible method to understand your community's needs. I had mentioned last night at the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, we're going to post on the project website the actual methodology to this, so that folks have an understanding if they would like to understand how a statistically valid survey that in which you get 443 from your community is a strong representation of the needs of your community. I won't get into the methodology here tonight, but I will field any questions about it towards the end if you do have those. But simply, our goal was to achieve 375 surveys, and we did receive 443. So approximately 18% more than the goal. Simply, if you did this survey 100 times, you would get the same results 95 out of 100 times with that plus or minus of about 4.6%. Next slide. So I am not going to go through every question this evening, but one of the things that our partner ETC Institute is charged with is to create a survey and administer a survey and get results that are both geographically and demographically representative of your community. If they don't check those two boxes, then it's not statistically valid, and therefore we almost have to start over. What you see in front of you is a scatter plot map of where all of the surveys were received based on the red dots. And as expected, where you have your residents and your more dense areas of your residential community, that is where you see the greatest number of dots. In the areas in which you either don't have residential and or have larger lots or less density, you see fewer dots. And I'm not going to show the demographic information, but I can tell you that as part of the full report, there is that information included in it. And it does match up with the demographics of your community as we know them today. Next slide. And the first question to circle back to the advocacy question or the advocacy statement that came up during the focus group and community input sessions in January, we asked a question, next slide, that really looked at folks' level of agreement with the benefits or statements about Oro Valley's Parks and Recreation System. The dark blue indicates the level at which people strongly agree with each of these statements. The light blue indicates where they agree with those statements. And the very, very top line, make Oro Valley a more desirable place to live. 93% of your community either strongly agreed or agreed with that statement. If we jump all the way to the bottom, the very last one is improves my mental health and reduces stress. When we combine the strongly agree and agree statements or results, 61% of your community agreed with that statement. So what we found as part of the overall conversations back in January was very much resonated as part of this statistically valid survey. One of the things I do want to point out is probably about just over maybe about two thirds down the screen, helps to reduce crime in my neighborhood and keeps kids out of trouble. That is one that typically across the country, a lot of folks don't necessarily maybe understand or make that connection between parks being used for the right reasons versus parks not being used for the right reasons. Your community strongly agreed and or agreed with that statement at a level of 2 out of every 3 people in your community. I would say that in our conversations with your police chief, he very much echoed the sentiment of your community here as well. Next slide. So into a series of questions about park and facility visitation and condition. Next slide. We asked folks what they used most over the last 6 months in your parks and recreation system. Steam Pump Ranch and your paved trails outpaced significantly all other amenities in your community. And then the next two are really trails as well. The CDO at Riverfront Park, as well as natural surface trails. So again, we see a lot of synergy between the qualitative information that we receive from your community as well as the electronic survey and what is resonating in the statistically valid survey as well. Next slide. As far as the condition of your facilities, and you all should be very proud of this to a certain extent, and I will couch this. The dark blue indicates folks rating your parks and recreation facilities as excellent. The light blue indicates them rating them as good. And then the orange and pink are fair and poor. I think the biggest thing to point out here is that you have very little orange and pink on this screen. So your commitment to investing and reinvesting in your parks and recreation system should be commended, but also the maintenance, parks maintenance staff and the folks that manage your facilities also should be commended, because folks, for the most part, with the exception of your two dog parks, are rating your system in line with national benchmarks. Those were the only two that kind of slipped below that national benchmark line. As a recovering Parks and Recreation Director, I will say though, I think the 29% national benchmark is a pretty low standard for which to shoot for. And so when I start to look at these charts and I see a lot of dark blue in the 40s and 50s and 60s and even 70 percentile, that means you're doing an excellent job, especially in comparison to the rest of the country. Next slide. So program participation and quality, same similar exercise that we did with facilities. Next slide. So we asked folks if they had participated in recreation programs and services offered by the town over the last year. 45% of your community said yes, 55% said no. As that compares to the national benchmark, it's much higher, about 12 percentage points higher. However, next slide, they did not rate the overall quality of your programs very high. There is a lot of orange and a lot of pink on this slide. And I think one of the things that contributes to this is not the staff, it's not the instructors. You have a lot of programs and services taking place at a location in which you just took over. And I recognize that renovation and capital improvement at the community center and the golf course and the tennis courts, the swimming pool, is very much needed going forward. The other thing I think to recognize is that you all are trying to run a lot of programs in spaces that were not designed for those programs. So that in and of itself reduces significantly how people rate the quality of the program. I think anybody that's ever put on a party or ever done an event, the first thing you look at is where are you going to do that? And I think this kind of resonates very well with the simple fact that you all recognize that an investment and reinvestment in that site, in that location, is going to be paramount to moving these numbers forward. Next slide. So a couple of things I wanted to bring up with regards to how, you know, these aren't all that necessary because you do have a high level of participation. But it is important to recognize that there's a lot of communication methods out there to let people know what it is that you're doing. So our first question was, how did people currently learn about recreation programs? Number one was the newspaper. And then number two was friends and neighbors. Number three was the website. And then others were local magazines and publications. So this kind of sets the stage for how people are learning. But we wanted to ask the question, how would you prefer to learn about programs and services offered by the town? So next slide. And you can see that newspaper went from about 51% in terms of how people learned to 28% in terms of them preferring to learn through the newspaper. The number one by far was emails and e-blasts that come from the town. And then the third was the town website. You can look all the way down the list, about two-thirds of the line, you find friends and neighbors. And I think this is significant to recognize. We've all played the telephone game. We all know how messages get and details get lost as you play that telephone game. But the other thing associated with friends and neighbors is many times they communicate about what happened in the past or what their experience was. And so it's great to have strong levels of advocacy for you and for people to talk about what it is that you're doing, but you don't want to leave it up to your friends and neighbors to convey the details of that to your community. So e-blasts and emails and the town website are certainly the two that you control the most that you want to focus any marketing efforts going forward. Next slide. Recreation program activities and needs. There's a couple of slides here I just want to run through. Next slide. And you'll see a lot of synergy here with the other input that we had received. I do want to make a note. I don't necessarily want to read through this entire list, but your top seven in terms of your most important to your households are going to resonate on the next slide as well. Number one was community special events. Number two was fitness and wellness programs. And they matched up pretty well with national benchmarks, a little bit higher on community special events, a little bit lower on fitness and wellness programs. Typically, those are the things that are available to a lot of age segments of your community. As you move down the list, you start to see things that become very age-specific and or skill-specific, which is why they don't end up being as important to the community as a whole. But we are going to do some cross-tabulation on this to understand what's important to families with young kids, families with teenagers, young adults, as well as the senior population, to give you an understanding that this is not necessarily a holistic representation of the different life modes that make up your community. Next slide. So we also wanted to ask people not only what was important, but what they wanted you to do more of. And so this chart kind of gives you an understanding of what they want you to do more of. And so I mentioned the top seven on the previous slide of what was important. The top seven on what they want you to do more of is the exact same. It's not necessarily in the exact same order, but it is the exact same the top seven that you have in terms of what's most important. So when we start to think about priorities of the community and where you make investments in programs and services going forward, you have a clear-cut top seven to focus on. Again, not to say that you won't offer things that are below that top seven. It's just the community as a whole has prioritized for you what that top seven is. Next slide. Thinking and intuitively with staff that special events was going to rate pretty high, we wanted to get just a little bit more insight on this in terms of what those concepts would involve. So cultural celebrations, festivals, entertainment, and then food and beverage kind of rounded out your top three. So again, it gives you a better understanding that if you are going to do special events in your community post-COVID at some point, that you have some themes around which to build those events. Next slide. So same exercise that we went through with programs and services for park facility and amenities and needs. I think it's important to recognize that programs and services feel as if there are a lot of formally offered programs, but there's also a lot of self-directed activity that takes place in parks and facilities, just simply like walking and jogging and biking on trails. I think it's an important distinction as we start to move through the next series of slides. Next slide. So again, importance for facilities in your community, not to overstate trails and open space, but again, they resonate really high for you all. Neighborhood parks, restroom buildings, all in the top 10. I think it's important to recognize that golf is number four in terms of most importance to your community. As that rates against the national benchmark, golf across the country, in terms of what's most important, it's only important to like 9% of households. In your community, it's important to 22% of your households. And that's a significant for a couple of reasons. One, we know that golf typically as a sport across the country is in a state of decline. More 10 times more golf courses have closed in the last 5 years than have opened or have been opened after renovation. The other thing that golf does align with your community is the demographics of the sport aligns very well with the demographics of your community as well. So it's not surprising that golf would be that high on your list. Next slide. In terms of what's what folks need more of, this is where you start to see a little bit of a difference. Folks want more neighborhood parks. They want more restroom buildings. They do want more open space. They do want more community gardens. The trails are still in your top 10, but because you have such a strong trail system, it isn't as high of an unmet need, and we don't have that direct correlation on between the facility importance and unmet needs as we did on the program side. I think the one thing to recognize, and I stated this with regards to programs, as you start to move down this list, you start to get very age and or skill set specific. And when you start to do that with amenities, of course, it doesn't appeal to as many people in your community as a whole, but they will appeal to a very specific segment of your community going forward. So I don't want you to think that because things end up being on the low end of the important list or unmet needs, that it doesn't mean that you're not going to strategically invest in that going forward. It's just simply that you're going to be very strategic about that investment as we move forward. Next slide. So we wanted to ask people to put their money where their mouth was and how they would want you to spend their taxpayer dollars after we have given them an opportunity to provide us with their dream list and our wish list. Next slide. So this is a summary of the top four. People were given a choice of four actions that they would want that they support the town of Oro Valley funding without a tax increase. Number one was take care of what you already have. Number two was take care of what you already have, but specific to your trail system. Number three was purchase land to preserve open space. And then a clear-cut number four was expand trails, but do that in existing parks, not necessarily as part of a long linear system. So those are your top four in which people would love for you to invest in. It again doesn't mean that you don't strategically invest in things that are lower on the list, but your community has the greatest amount of support for those top four. Next slide. So we take all of this information, the demographic information, the trend information that's in the phase one report, all of the community engagement, and we throw it in a blender and come out with, no, I'm kidding. Next slide. We do have a methodology around which we take the qualitative and quantitative data and intersect it and interface it and have it speak to each other. To basically come up with a weighted scoring system. I can tell you that the statistically valid survey, which captures your community as a whole and is very specific in terms of meeting the demographic and geographic parts of your community, but also represents users and non-users of your park and recreation system, we weight that at about 75% those results. So you won't necessarily see any surprises on these next two slides. Next slide. So recreation programs and services, you have a clear-cut top five. And what high means is that you look to expand these programs and services whenever possible. Medium means that you look to expand, but you're very strategic about it. And simply, it could mean that you have to understand the relationship between the uses of the spaces for these programs and the other potential uses of the exact same spaces for these programs. For example, golf lessons and clinics, you're going to be very strategic about when you offer them so that you're not taking tee times away or driving range opportunities away from the folks that just want to come golf. Pickleball lessons and clinics, again, how does that play into leagues or open play? Open swim, you have to balance that with a multitude of uses at your aquatic center. The things that are on the lower end of your list are simply this. You look to expand them, but you look to expand them in a very strategic manner. Or you are already right-sized in terms of meeting the community's needs. If there are things on this list that you are not doing, it is not a place to invest taxpayer dollars for programs and services going forward. Again, if you're offering things on the low end of the equation, it doesn't mean that you don't do it. It just means that you have to be very strategic about how you invest in those programs and services going forward. Next slide. Same exercise with parks, facilities, and amenities. A lot of consistency on the high priority, a lot of consistency in the middle of the charts that we've showed and the things that we've talked about. And then again, on the low end of the spectrum, I will tell you that in almost every community that we work with across the country, athletic fields end up being on the low end of the list. But it is simply because most kids drop out of team sports by the time they're 13. And they're also very skill-based. But we also know that athletic fields are a staple, as much of a staple of a park and recreation system as playgrounds are, and restroom buildings are. And so again, not every park that you have is gonna have athletic fields in it, but we need to make sure that we right-size your parks and recreation athletic field system with the commensurate use that you're going to have. It just simply is about strategic investment, and it doesn't mean that you're not going to expand. It just means that you're not going to expand exponentially going forward. Next slide. So our next steps, and I think this is really important to recognize, the community needs, the phase one of this report is a stepping off point for us. It creates a great foundation around which we then start to understand how you strategically invest and reinvest in your existing park system, as well as how you strategically expand your park and recreation system. So next slide. We're going to go through a series of very technical work over the next 5 to 6 months that includes levels of service standards. Simply, how much of any one kind of or type of park do you need? How many athletic fields do you need? How many playgrounds do you need? How many splash pads do you need? And then we're also going to map that to understand the equity of your parks and recreation system across your community. So are there gaps in your system that need to be filled? We also have to take into consideration all of the available natural land to the east of you offered by other providers. Though it's not necessarily within your geographical boundary, it has to be taken into consideration because it abuts the entire eastern edge of your community. We will look at recreation programs and assessments and the operational funding associated with that to find the right balance between cost recovery and tax subsidy. Of course, a capital improvement plan, funding and revenue strategies, all of the actions that are necessary in order to implement over a 5 to 10 year plan, all kind of culminating in a final master plan. I will tell you that we are a firm that is not going to give you a bunch of visionary recommendations. We are going to give you recommendations that are realistic, implementable, and financially sustainable. And I will expand upon that very quickly. We are going to look at any recommendation that we make through the lens of total cost of ownership. And what we mean by that is, in many cases, parks and recreation systems aren't viewed as infrastructure in the same way that utilities are, roads are. But parks and recreation has a lot of built environment to it. And every one of anything that you build, whether it be a lighting system, an athletic field, a playground, a dog park, fencing, benches, swimming pools, they all have life cycles to them. And so we're going to look at it through the lens of understanding that you can have one-time dollars to build something, but you also need to ensure that you have the operations and maintenance dollars to support that capital investment going forward. And we also need to take into account the life cycle replacement of that. Every asset has a life cycle, just like cars, just like roofs, just like lighting systems in your own home, flooring. Every one of those assets has a life cycle. And we need to make sure that you recognize not just what that short-term investment is, especially when we're talking about expanding a park and recreation system, but how that investment needs to be reinvested in 15, 20, 25 years down the road. Next slide. Questions.
Okay, thank you. Mike, how do I pronounce your last name?
The last name is Savetz.
Savetz. Thank you, Mr. Savetz. Mr. Standish, do we have any blue cards?
No, we do not, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. So, Council, I'll open it up to you for questions. Councilmember Solomon.
Hi, thank you. I'll call you Mike. How about that?
That is fantastic. I appreciate that.
I love your background. Here's I really like some of the things you said, such as the Catalina State Park, which is right on our boundary. And that brings to the question that I actually had. For example, in the survey, is there any way to determine or ascertain, for example, people say they want more hard surface trails, soft surface or dirt trails, do they know we already have 54 miles of those type trails in the community?
Yes, I think the biggest thing that I think is why we love to ask the funding question to very directly get at an answer for you is the fact that folks recognize that those are important and they have some unmet need. But a lot of your community recognizes that they want you to reinvest in your existing system before you expand it. And if you are going to expand your trail system, it isn't necessarily that long linear trail. It's that folks want a place to walk in a park. Right. And that's where the addition of loop trails in the existing park system kind of comes into play. So I think that's an important distinction in terms of not just what people found to be important and needed, but also what they want you to fund.
I know, but my concern is, do they know that we already have those systems? I remember someone asking about, we need to put in bicycle trails a month or two after we had spent a year opening up one of the world-renowned mountain bike trails from Big Wash. And that was a great partnership with the county property. So how do we know that people even know the facilities
I think that's a great question. And I think it, one of the questions that we did ask in the survey that I did not show tonight, but it does resonate exactly what you just said, is that things that keep people from participating in your programs or using your parks is they don't know what it is that you have. And that was by far the number one overwhelming response that we had received. So it's part and parcel why we also like to ask the questions about how people learn about what it is that you offer versus how they prefer to learn. So I think sometimes we allow, and government is guilty of doing this to a certain extent, but a lot of businesses are as well, especially in this day and age of social media. They allow others to carry your message for you, as opposed to understanding that you have a significant role in creating that sense of awareness going forward. And the community, in through that response of the methods in which they prefer to learn about what it is that the Town of Oro Valley's Parks and Recreation System offers, two out of the top three were within your control. One was email, and the other one was through your website. And so I think it's important to recognize that a greater concerted effort of building on the advocacy that you have is taking it a step further and making people aware of what it is that you offer.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Thank you. I was just wondering, when we get the full report, will we have the statistically valid survey and the other information? You mentioned being broken down by age and for cross-tabulation purposes?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Will we also have some information about geographic locations as to where those answers came in?
That I will have to check and see if we geocoded the responses. I don't think that was a requirement of the scope, but we can at the very least do that based on, we can at least break it down by age segmentation.
Okay. If it's possible, I'd like to also see by neighborhood and area, because you talked later about equity across the community. And that's something that I think that when we dig into the results a little bit more, we would really want to be able to take a look at, you know, are we meeting the needs of every different age group adequately? And are we meeting the needs of every neighborhood adequately based on, you know, what they have available, as well as what the taxpayer dollars are going towards? And so that would kind of help us to be able to sift through. Obviously, trails and open spaces came out really high on the list. And that doesn't surprise me, because I know how important open space and trails are to our community. And I know that they can be used by every age group. When I'm out walking on our park trails, you know, there's from children riding bikes all the way up, every member of our community is able to use, you know, those kind of trails and open space. So that doesn't really surprise me that a lot of people are interested in that. But I would want to make sure that, you know, we don't completely ignore a certain category just because there weren't enough people in that category or, you know, to trigger being in the absolute top response of trails or open space. So that's why I'd be interested in seeing that equity division, so we can invest strategically in that way to meet everyone's needs.
Yes, we will. One of the big next steps for us is level of service standards and the mapping exercise. And we're not just going to map your park system generally. We will map it to the extent that what we call park classifications, neighborhood parks, community parks, special use parks, but we will also map playgrounds and athletic fields and tennis courts and pickleball courts as well, to get an understanding of how well any one of those amenities that you have as part of your system provide equity or equitable access to them. The other thing from a level of service perspective that we are going to look at is we're going to look at it through the lens of the different experiences provided your park and recreation system and how equitable that is across the community as a whole from a geographic perspective. So there will be a lot of technical work that allows us to use the the community needs phase as a guide, but it certainly isn't the end all be all.
Okay. And when you do that, looking at all the different amenities and the locations, will you be noticing these are the ones that are from the town of Moro Valley? These are ones that are offered by HOAs. This is Catalina State Park being offered by the state park system, et cetera.
Yes, we absolutely have to take that into consideration, because though many of the HOA parks are privatized and only accessible or technically developed to be only accessed by HOA residents, they do meet a significant, they do meet a level of need for those residents. So if we were not to take that into consideration, then we would be making recommendations that would overstate your need and run you the risk of overbuilding your system.
Okay, thank you. I suspect that's part of where the restrooms comes from, is because from my personal experience, well, all three of the town's major parks have restrooms available. Many of the HOA parks do not. And one of the most common questions I get on social media is, what's the codes for the bathrooms? So that's probably where some of that confusion comes in, is not everyone's clear on which parks are maintained by the town and which parks are maintained by the HOAs.
Correct. You and your Parks and Recreation Director are in sync. She mentioned that exact same thing to me last week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Diaz-Trahan, I had a question in regards to next steps. We had in our earlier budget conversation that there's a less amount that's being allocated for phase two for this project, and that the division of work would be between a consultant and town staff. Of these six bulleted items for next steps, can you, what do you see the town staff doing and what do you see the consultant doing? And I don't know if you have those in front of you. I can read them off if need be.
That's okay, Mr. Mayor. So we actually have a meeting scheduled with Mr. Spitz to identify where the greatest talent pool is within each one of those. Where the budget reduction occurred is within the conceptual design work. And our thought is that once we identify the level of service, the demographic equity, or the geographic equity, at that point, then we can come back and revisit the conceptual site plans.
Okay. Well, the conceptual site plans, as far as these bulleted items, would that fall under the, no, it's final master plan development? Would the conceptual designs be part of that, or?
No, so with the reduction of phase two, you're likely only going to see what's listed on that slide that Mr. Spitz showed.
Okay, so
we will not be able to afford the conceptual site plans.
Okay, so the $30,000 covers these next steps that were presented.
That's what we're working through with Mr. Spitz, yes.
All right, okay. And then, Mike, I had a question for you, or a few questions, because I don't, yeah. So you mentioned on the recreation programs and services, this came towards the end of your presentation, and about expand. You talked specifically expanding community special events, fitness wellness programs, but you also mentioned that the rating of our programs and services were not as high as we would have, you know, liked to see. So my question is it a matter of expanding, or is it an issue of quantity versus quality?
I think it's a combination of both. I think the one part of the discussion that I think is going to really tee up phase two for us around programs and services is what are the inherent issues that are creating the quality issue. I think it's always important to get the quality right first and foremost. And then once you get the quality right, you then have your marching orders from your community about where to expand the programs and services that you directly provide to your community. There are going to end up being things in your community, such as expansion of sport organizations or sports programs that are run by your nonprofits, but that can only happen if you expand your athletic field system. And so I think it's about getting the quality down first, especially during COVID times. I actually think it provides opportunities for you to reimagine programs in a creative way that focus on quality first and foremost, recognizing full well that the expansion of those programs over the next year or two are probably going to be somewhat limited anyway, whether it be by COVID restrictions or financial implications. So, Mayor, to answer your question, I think it's a combination of both, but I would always state quality first before expansion.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'm glad to hear that. This is kind of tied to the Vice Mayor's question, and this may get teased out and more information that you provide. I mean, it looked like from the survey response location map that there was fairly good distribution across the community as far as the surveys. I looking at the population by age segment, I mean, I was kind of fascinated by some of the data that you provided in regards to the demographics. With the survey response, I guess I'm particularly interested in that those younger age groups, zero to 12, 13 to 17, how do we capture the interest in a statistically valid survey? I don't imagine a 12-year-old filling out the survey, right?
So the way the survey was really, the way it, almost every question was phrased was you and members of your household. And so the survey taker was answering the questions based on not just their own individual interests, but the interests of their household members as well. And so I'll give you a very quick understanding of how we will cross-tab the survey results alluded to by the vice mayor is we will, for very easy age segment breakouts for us, is to say families or households that have obviously kids in them but are like 0 to 10 years old. And then households that have kids in them that are teenagers. And you may end up with some of those households that have both. That is one way to tease it out from a family's perspective in which you have young kids or teenagers in your household. Another is the young adults that don't have kids yet. They are early or young empty nesters. So understanding that their needs are different than when they had young kids or they were responsible for their kids' programs and services. And then the seniors, and I think we're going to really try to understand the senior population a little bit more in your community than just lumping everybody 55 and older together. We do a great job as parks and recreation and schools of breaking kids down into individual age groups or lumping them together 7, 8, or 9 and 10. Then all of a sudden we get to 55 and older and we lump everybody together. And that's not the case. And so I think we recognize that from an age segmentation perspective, when we do these cross tabs, we're going to have to break down that 55 and older age group into smaller age segments, possibly 55 to 64, 65 to 74, and then what I like to affectionately refer to as the super seniors, 75 and older.
Okay, thanks. At the end of your presentation, you had basically the prioritized needs in terms of program services, facilities, amenities. Is that a reflection of all the community input that was provided? There was the website, there were the intercept survey. How did you arrive at those prioritized needs?
Yes, we basically took all of the information and created a value system to all of that. The one thing I think is important to recognize is that the website was exceptionally helpful to hear from the community to really make sure that we got the questions and the choices on the survey correct. And so what we're helping to help create consistency from what we heard in the qualitative face-to-face conversations and the town hall meetings very much resonated there, but it allowed us to really tease out what those questions needed to be and what those choices needed to be when we did the intercept survey, the electronic survey, and the statistically valid survey. So we did take all of those responses and create a value system to them. But as I mentioned, the statistically valid survey weighted the highest. We gave that a 75% weight because it's demographically and geographically balanced. The electronic survey, though I think the results were very similar to what we saw in the statistically valid survey, even in terms of demographics, in terms of who responded, folks still probably could have taken that more than once. We tried to make it as lengthy, but not too crazy lengthy, so that people had to think twice about taking it more than once. The intercept surveys, folks could have gone to multiple locations. The town hall meeting we know was very, very heavily attended by folks from Rancho Vistoso. So we really tried to create a balance of taking all of that information. I think one of the key things, the big takeaway for me in looking at all that information, though, was there was a lot of consistency in terms of what your top tier was, what your middle tier was, and what your bottom tier was. And that actually kind of made the whole prioritized needs equation a little bit easier for us.
Okay, thank you. Will you provide that breakdown, those values?
Sure.
I think that would be helpful to us to really understand. And then it's really more of a comment, but on page 3 of the report, I think of this as the executive summary. And under the economic development through park development section, the last bullet talks about generalized opportunities to enhance economic impact via tourism. And it's mentioned to golf, pickleball, tennis, athletic, field sports, so on and so forth. It seems to me that I would suggest that even though some of these experiences are maybe outside the town, so Catalina State Park, Coronado National Forest, Tortolita Mountain Park, and so forth, is that we have real opportunities for nature tourism and also not just nature tourism, so wildlife viewing, bird watching, but also opportunities for mountain biking, road biking are activities that we could certainly take advantage of, I think, in terms of economic development or just as an attractive place that would bring business to Oro Valley. I mean, we have a number of bike stores. We have stores that focus entirely just on running, walking, hiking shoes, right? So I just think that was maybe an omission that I would encourage you to include in the report. So,
absolutely understood. Well stated. Thank you.
Councilmember Pena.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you going through this presentation. One of the comments that you made during the presentation was that our community has the capacity to grow about another 6,000 people. And you can correct me if that's not what you had said about the population growth. But my question is how, especially if the 50% of the population is going to approach 50 years or older, is that analysis going to be included in this? And the reason I'm asking this is because these are going to be capital expenditures that as time goes, you know, they could be costly. And so will that be factored in for growth so that we can at least plan, right, as we're going along for that growth and understand the cost that goes with that? So will that be factored in?
Yes, unequivocally. I mean, when we start to establish level of service standards, we establish it based on, we will start to understand what your needs are most critical today, but also as your population grows, how those needs exponentially grow as well. And so I can't overstate this enough that we are going to create implementable, realistic, and financially sustainable recommendations for you. We're not in the business of creating visionary plans that you wish you didn't take up so much hard drive space for on your computer, because it's a great plan, but it never can be implemented. We need to factor in what your population growth is going to be and in which direction it's going to be, in terms of it being an aging community, or if it's going to be a community that still remains relatively consistent with your aging projections right now. You know, I think either way, I stated this last night during the Parks and Rec Advisory Board meeting, even if you do end up with younger folks in your community, making up a majority of that growth in the next 10 to 15 years, you're still going to have a 55 and older population that approaches 50%, because there's going to be a bunch of folks that are 45 to 54 that are going to move into that 55 and older category. And so I think it's important to recognize that your community is, you are who you are, and it is who you will continue to be, at least when we look at it over the next generation or so. And so that does play a factor in the type of park and recreation system that you offer to your community. And then, of course, how that translates into the dollars and cents necessary around that concept of total cost of ownership.
Yep. Okay, thank you. I know that, well, at least it's been shared with councils throughout at least the time I've been on council, and I think before, where we do have our families that had kids, and there were a couple of generations of kids that grew up, and we've always been on a pay-as-you-go in Oral Valley. And so there have been generations of kids who did not have some of the amenities, right, that they would have liked to have had. And so when I heard that from you, it was like, okay, you know, if there are going to be a lot of funds spent over time on this, it would be nice that, yes, I agree with you, that population is going to continue to stay in Oral Valley, but we also have the younger set too, right, that will continue to be here. So it would be nice to as things grow, as the population grows, that we get that factored in. So I'm glad that you're going to include that holistically.
Thank you.
Mike, I have one follow-up question, and that's in regards to the asset condition and life cycle ratings. It wasn't in your presentation, but the report that you provided.
Yes.
And you list some of the our major parks in the community. When I look at the acreage, it's showing the Ron Hop Park at 4.5 acres as an example, Riverfront Park at 30 acres. I have to admit, I don't know what the acreage of either of those parks are, but Naranja is, I believe, bigger than Riverfront. And so I'm...
Absolutely. We'll go back and scrub that data. I'm guessing that I missed a decimal point or two in that
okay.
Number.
Okay. So my more importantly is the overall condition rating and life cycle tier. The tiers are 2, 3, 4. Is it 1, 2, 4? Is that the tier rating or?
5 is the highest, meaning that is 5 stars. That means things are in excellent condition, mm-hmm. and you're not necessarily looking to life cycle replace a lot of amenities in that park over the next 10 years. The lower you get in terms of that life cycle condition rating means that you have more assets in your park that you're going to look to replace in the next 10 years. That is a summary of a report that Kim Lee Horn is still in the process of finalizing and generating for us. There were a couple of parks that we missed the first go around. So it's meant to be kind of a starting point, but I listening to you, Mayor, I think it definitely is going to need to be scrubbed going forward.
Yeah, I would definitely, as an example, steam pump ranch, and again, not knowing what, I didn't know what the full range of the tiers were or what they meant, but it's rated as a 3, and the Elk and Keesler Golf and Tennis at Push Ridge is rated a 2. My understanding of some of our facilities at Steam Pump Ranch is that they're in high need of, I mean, there's been some stabilization, but restoration work, for example. So I just wasn't necessarily in complete agreement, or just needed more information about this overall life cycle tier and condition rating that's shown here. So.
Yes, as a supplement to this, we are going to provide a standalone, more detailed document than what you see as a couple of page summary in the report. And we have yet to vet all of that information with staff, but we felt it necessary to at least include some of that information to let you know that that work has been done at a high level at this point.
Yeah, no, I think it's very important information, and it will help us in our decision-making process in terms of where to invest, you know, limited funds. I mean, so.
Correct.
Yeah. I'm not seeing any raised hands. Are there no other questions from council? Mike, I think in behalf of the council, we appreciate the work that you've done, and Ms. Diaz-Trahan, we appreciate your work and the work of your team. This is an excellent first phase product, and it's incredibly informative and will be helpful to us going forward. So thank you, Mike.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Mayor and Council.
With that, I believe our study session is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.